16 counties in southeast and mid-Michigan. Please adhere strictly to this quarantine and don't take firewood camping or on vacation with you. Simply put, it is illegal to move ash trees or ash products outside of this area. Firewood or ash trees may not visibly look infested. By transporting these items, you could unknowingly spread this pest. For more information, contact the state's toll-free hotline at 866-325-0023 or online at michigan.gov/MDA. This message brought to you by Michigan's Emerald Ash Borer Task Force.
Every kiss begins with K.
I remember the first big snow last year. The kids' overwhelming excitement, everyone scurrying around to bundle up and get the sleds out. When we were all set, the kids hollered for Mom, but she was nowhere to be found. Then I looked out the window, and there she was, on the ground, making the most perfect snow angel. Just seeing her giggling and acting like a kid made me fall for her all over again.
This time of year, what gift will touch her heart? The Leo Diamond. The first diamond to be independently measured and certified for superior fire, sparkle, and brilliance. Each one is handcrafted, reflecting the passion and skill of four generations of master artisans at Leo Schachter. Set in rings, pendants, or earrings, the Leo is priced from $599.99 to $7,000. At K Jewelers, your authorized Leo Diamond Jeweler.
Even without the snow, she's still a perfect angel.
Every kiss begins with K.
Shop K Jewelers, 13 convenient locations. Free financing for 1 year available. Minimum purchase and minimum monthly payment required.
Does driving your old car make you feel foul? Then bust out of that old bird. Are you stuffed with a high monthly payment? Then get out of that old gobbler. Are you tired of driving a car you hate? Then trade in that old turkey and get top dollar for your trade. Plus, keep the manufacturer rebate up to $3,000 during Turkey Day at LaFontaine Honda and Toyota. Zero down, 0% financing, zero credit hassle. LaFontaine Honda and Toyota has it all. Brand new Accords, Camry, Pilot SUVs, Sienna minivan, plus loads of certified pre-owned vehicles. All in one location and all at the lowest prices guaranteed. Bad credit, no credit, discharge, bankruptcy, repossession. We still want to get you approved. At LaFontaine, just announced special 0% financing on Camry sedans for 5 years through Monday only. LaFontaine Honda and Toyota will give you top dollar for your trade. Plus, you keep the manufacturer rebate up to $3,000. Open Friday till 8 and Saturday till 5 on Telegraph, one block south of Michigan Avenue. Call 800-851-4841 now. Qualified buyers on select new vehicles.
It's already November 2003, so, David, I got the scoop. I got something to tell you.
You got inside scoop?
I do.
Inside information?
I do, yeah. Smart choice.
On?
It's the only way to go. Have you heard?
Interest.
Well, of course you've heard.
Interest only.
That's true. It's incredible, I hear.
I've heard something about it. Pay interest only. Purchase or refinancing.
Well, that's a pretty smart way to go.
Yeah, I mean, you can pay the interest, pay principal when you want to, so your payment goes way down, increase your cash flow. If you want to invest money, you can do that. If you want to pay your principal balance down, you can do that. So, yeah, interest only has really taken the market by storm. We've seen application volume stay just as high as it was during the refinance boom because of this new product. This is a big, big product. Everybody needs to look at it.
Well, that's great because people can use their money the way they want to and maybe put it back into their house, make it more valuable.
One word, choices.
Smart.
Smart choices.
Choices.
You like that?
Yes, from the mortgage experts at 800-333-ROCK, 800-333-ROCK. Visit them online at rockfinancial.com. David Hall and the mortgage experts at Rock Financial, a Quicken Loans company and equal housing lender.
WRIF Detroit presents Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. To express your opinion, call 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Now, coast to coast. Yeah, Internet's got us. www.wrive.com. So if you're listening anywhere in America, in fact, anywhere around the world, thanks for joining us. 11 o'clock in Detroit, Michigan, USA. Use those numbers, 313-298-WRIF. If you'd like to give us a shout via email, calltalkyes at yahoo.com. That's calltalkyes at yahoo.com. Well, the auction is coming back to Detroit. Oh, but before we start, I just wanted to give a big shout-out to the Kingsnakes that were on Bill Walters' show, Motor City Riffs. And, man, Great rock and blues. Thank you, Kingsnakes. I got their CD. I'm going to be playing it on the way home. In the meantime, though, we're open line. Anything you'd like to talk about, we're here for. We're going to talk about Bush's Thanksgiving dinner. Another stunt, right? You bought it? Come on. This is going to be a game show called How Dumb Can You Be? If you bought that one. But let me talk about the auction. It involves Bush as well. He's going to be here tomorrow morning. He's going back to the lucrative Detroit market. Because what have elections become other than an auction? Sold to the highest bidder, and right now, man, can you imagine anyone winning the next election other than George W. Bush if you want to base it solely on money raised? The last time Bush dined in Dearborn, he netted about $2.5 million for his reelection campaign. And he's going to be dropping in for lunch at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. You'd like to join him? Well, a couple of things. One, it would cost you $2,000 to get in. And, of course, if you tried to protest and say that George W. Bush is involved in this full-scale onslaught on our rights, our standard of living, on peace, on justice, on everything else, you wouldn't get anywhere near where he's having lunch, because all of a sudden, we have what is called free speech zones. Free speech zones where the police decide where protest and dissent can take place. Now, here's what Bush has raised so far. This is in Michigan, of course. What is it total out to be? Actually, more than that. $2,670,000. And you know, he's got all the big guys on board. Howard Dean is next. He was the former governor of Vermont. He's a Democrat. He's raised about $300,000. So you see where this is all going. John Edwards, $255,000. Poor John Kerry, $189,000. So you're talking about George W. Bush in the millions. His opponents in the hundreds of thousands. You get way down the line towards the end, and you've got people like Wesley Clark, the former general, $22,000. So given that American elections have turned into an auction, remember Bush? Bush was made this speech saying that the Middle East ought to emulate the democracy of the United States, that we ought to bring American-style democracy to the Middle East, that Iraq ought to have American-style democracy. In a way, it did. It's government to the highest bidder. Who's got the most amount of money? And the curious, of course, aspect of American elections, you don't have to win in order to be seated in the office. Remember George W. Bush came in second? Then his daddy's pal stole the election for him? So that's the kind of election democracy that Bush would like to see. So and yet he's worried because his popularity just motors along on these manufactured incidents or these stunts. The manufactured incident, of course, is the war against Iraq, which was absolutely unnecessary. Then, popularity went way up. Then all of a sudden, it's turned into this morass, this quagmire. Bush goes over there, and I think, 15 people have been killed since he was there, including Americans. What the stunts? Remember the stunt he pulled, the flying into that aircraft carrier, the USS Lincoln? Absolutely unnecessary. Cost us, the taxpayers, millions of dollars to arrange this stunt. And then he declared, mission accomplished? And how many Americans, in Spanish and Italian and Japanese and South Koreans now, have been killed since mission accomplished? But let's look at the, if you'd like to comment on any of this, please join me. I'm Peter Werby. This is Night Call, 313-298-WRIF. The Thanksgiving dinner. Everybody said, everybody. You know, one of the things you really have to be careful about is you don't associate everybody or all of us or the American people with what you read in the media or you hear in or see on the media or hear on the media. Because people say, well, everybody thinks it was just great that he flew in there. And you saw these headlines. I don't know if I have any of them here. Bush cements his leadership and what have you. Let me see if there's any of those. I thought there was one. There was one from Let's see, what paper is this? It's one of the London papers. It says, the turkey has landed, how Bush cooked up a secret mission to give thanks to his troops. Oh, yeah. Bush's Iraq trip reinforces role as leader. That's what this headline says, the Associated Press. Bush's Iraq trip reinforces role as leader. Now, why does it do that? I mean, here. In fact, this is an interesting article, the turkey has landed. Talks about the surprise visit. 210 days after declaring an end to major combat, Bush slipped into the unstable and dangerous Middle Eastern country that his troops now occupy, with the lights on his plane darkened and the windows blacked out. It was enough to secure valuable primetime television coverage on Thanksgiving Day, featuring pictures of a determined president rallying his troops after a grim month in which 70 lives have been lost. And as I said, more lives have been lost subsequently. Now, actually, this article, let me make sure that I'm saying where this is from. It's the London Independent. It's a good paper in England. You know, they got better papers than we have here. In fact, papers here mostly suck. They're just sort of bullhorns for the people in power. Every once in a while, you know, 3 months down the line, 3 years, 30 years, they'll say, oh, you know, what the politicians said were lies. But when it's right at the point when we need to have the information, you have to go to some paper out of London. You can't pick up the Detroit Free Press or the New York Times. I mean, sometimes there's information in there. But you have to kind of read between the lines in some of the papers like, you know, the New York Times. Now, news of the visit only broke in the U.S. after Air Force One had taken off from Baghdad and was on its way home. And no sooner was the visit made public in Baghdad than the city was shaken by the sounds of conflict, repeated loud explosions, gunfire, and ambulance sirens. One Iraqi citizen says, to hell with Bush, he's another Mongol in the line of invaders who have destroyed Iraq. So let's look at who this was aimed at. People say, boy, you know, here's Bush. This brave act, flying into Iraq International Airport in the dead of night. Plane's windows blacked out. No landing lights at all. Pretty dangerous stunt. Yeah, and I think stunt is the key word. Well, you say, wait a minute. We've got these men and women over there. Even if Bush has sent them on a fool's errand and cost the lives of hundreds of them, these are our neighbors. These are our sons and daughters, our brothers and sisters, our community members. And if George Bush is going to support them, if he actually endangered his own life, risked his own life, in order to support the troops that are over there, shouldn't we cut him a little slack? Shouldn't we cut George W. Bush a little slack and say, maybe he did an act that was just a thing in and of itself, for itself, that it wasn't a stunt? That it wasn't another way that he would hope that his sagging political fortunes could be raised up again. Well, sorry to burst the balloon. And again, you know, let's say we need that what do they call that, quiz show music? You know, doon doon doon. You know, how dumb can you be? Well, let's look at an article. And this appeared in counterpunch.org. Counterpunch.org, a site I would highly recommend. And it's co-edited by Alexander Coburn, C-O-C-K-B-U-R-N, but pronounced Coburn, thankfully, for Alex. Or it would sound like some, you know, like skin rash or something like that. But anyways, that's the way they say it over there. Anyways, Wayne Madsen, who's been on this program before, he's got an article on counterpunch.org called Wag the Turkey, Surprise Thanksgiving Dinner at 6 a.m., This is what all the media here missed, because they're so slavish towards power, and particularly slavish towards the Bush right-wing regime. Here's what Wayne Madsen says. He says, I may be a bit naive, but it's been a while since I served on active duty, but I can't recall ever sitting down to Thanksgiving dinner at 6 a.m. Air Force One touched down at Baghdad International Airport under cover of darkness at 5:20 a.m. Baghdad time. Bush was on the ground for 2.5 hours, his plane departing Baghdad about 7:50 a.m. Considering that it likely took some 30 minutes for Bush to disembark from Air Force One and travel by a heavily secured motorcade to the hangar where the troops were assembled, that means our military men and women were downing turkey, stuffing, cranberry sauce, pumpkin pie, and non-alcoholic beer at a time when most people would be eating eggs, bacon, grits, home fries, and toast. And this is what's going on. Let me see. I would have thought most of the troops, many of whom are support personnel who work relatively normal working hours, would have been more surprised when they were ordered to get up before sunrise to eat Thanksgiving dinner between 6 and 7:30 a.m. Chalk up the fact that the media didn't pay any attention to this, that most people in the media never saw a military chow line or experienced reveille in their lives. So it would certainly go over their heads that troops would be ordered out of bed to eat turkey and stuffing before the crack of dawn. Stunt. Stunt. It's nothing but a stunt. Playing again on our emotions. Playing again on our fears, playing again on our concerns for the mostly young men and women over there, risking their lives for George Bush's fool's errand, for his monstrous lie about the threat that Iraq represented to the United States. This isn't about supporting our troops, his visit, his dinner, his tear in his eye. Who the hell knows? He might have had a tear in his eye. I mean, he doesn't have a thought in his head. There's probably lots of room for emotion. So where was this beamed to? Who was the recipient of this? It was you and me, pals, friends. Yeah. It was done for us. It was done for us to consume. It was done for us to sit on this day of Thanksgiving and see George W. Bush with the troops. He only talked to 600 troops. The Iraqis said, why didn't he talk to us? Why didn't, he's the, you know, the head of the occupying power. Why didn't he come talk to the ordinary Iraqis the way Senator Clinton did? Some people think that's why he went over there. Because he's worried that Clinton might, no, we're not talking Bill, we're talking Hillary, that Hillary might make a run for the presidency. And, you know, he knows that almost everything that he's done is based on falsely elevated, what would you call it? Falsely elevated appreciation. I got to get a better word than that. We'll leave it at that. And this dreadful fear that every time there's not a war, every time there's not a terrorist attack, every time that he is not able to jerk our chains, his popularity just sinks. And people aren't even paying attention to the economy, to our rights, to what's happening to our standard of living, all that. I mean, that's the real news, but no one pays much attention to that. And you know, people consume these images like they do movies. I mean, everybody knows that essentially when we watch a movie, we're being fooled, right? I mean, we suspend our judgment, our critical faculties. I mean, we don't sit there and look and say, you know, those are separately shot scenes that are linked together as a montage to give the impression that this is all happening at once. And the humor or the, you know, the excitement or the horror or whatever we're seeing on the screen, that's not really real. We know they're actors, and we know that that's not really happening, and it's all special effects. Well, if we did that, we wouldn't, why bother to go to the movies? Right? It's the man behind the curtain. What we want to see is in movies. We want to see the thrills, the excitement, the sadness, the glory, the excitement, all of that. And we should understand that we have to apply those same standards in reverse when we're watching politicians on that same medium, on a screen or on our tube. That they realize that they are the active communicators, you and I are the passive recipients. Remember what I said of the, that foul pillhead spokesman for the conservative movement, Rush Limbaugh? Why do you think they call him Rush? He said he was born to broadcast, and he laughingly said, meaning his audience, you were born to listen. You were born to listen. And that's what these arrogant SOBs think, and these right-wingers. It's they. This small sector of America that knows what's best, not only for us, but for the entire world. And they can steal our labor, limit our rights, completely transform this country, and do so with sleight of hand and stunts like this, this trip to Iraq by George W. Bush. All right, a little later I want to kind of connect up Iraq, the border strike in Ann Arbor, and also the events in Miami, the police state that was imposed there. But now let's get to some of your calls. I'd like to hear from you. Well, I mean, do you think I'm being too harsh? Did that Bush trip, what I'm calling a stunt, really seem to be genuine to you? It's a little hard for you to call up 313-298-WRIF and say, yeah, I thought it was real authentic. If you think it's real authentic, why did he do it at 6:30 a.m.? You know what would have happened if they would have done it at Baghdad time? Let's say, yeah, people can eat Thanksgiving dinner as early as, say, like 2 or 3. Well, if he would have got there at 3, that would have meant this would have been on the 11 o'clock news. So come on, someone call up. Tell me I'm being way too cynical and explain to me why George W. Bush served the troops in Iraq essentially Thanksgiving breakfast. I want to hear about this. All right, let's go to our phones. Rick Fox is our producer and also our phone screener. Call him at 313-298-WRIF. Hi, this is Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening. It's Peter Werby with you.
I don't think you're being too hard at all. I figured out what he wanted to be in there before Hillary because you'd be hearing all kinds of jokes like, what's the difference between Hillary Clinton and George Bush? Hillary's been to Baghdad.
I don't know if that's a joke, but... So you didn't buy it either. Did that occur to you? That did not occur to me. I mean, that's why it's so important not to just swallow all this stuff you see in the newspaper or, on television, but rather, I mean, the people that write on, counterpunch.org or commondreams.org, sites like that and hundreds of others, you go, whew, wow, I didn't think of that.
That was the first thought I had, because I'd been listening to BBC stories about her visit to Afghanistan and how the next stop in her itinerary was Baghdad.
Okay. I mean, I'm willing to say, you're smarter than me. I mean, I ain't even smart. I just read stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, too, because I read a lot of stuff, too. But, I've also got a cynical understanding of the nature of politics. And somebody like him really would not want to be upstaged by a woman when it comes to warfare.
Yeah, and,
he's never been through warfare.
Actually, you don't, yeah, like Bush, who essentially scammed out of the draft during the Vietnam War. Yeah, you don't have to be smart for all this. All you have to do is kind of read what other smart people write. So I'm in the second category mainly. I mean, I got a few ideas. I think all of us do. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Have a good evening.
Hey, let me ask you a question. Do you see that photograph of Bush serving the turkey dinner and all?
Yeah, and I thought it was the greatest waste of American taxpayer money.
Sure, just think
Why couldn't they have one of the soldiers whose job that is do it?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting. I always think of this. I think, how much did that cost? I mean, can you imagine, given all the security, that could have cost less than a couple million?
I've got a fair idea of what it cost, and, it's way out of proportion for what it was. It's, it's basically us fundraising for his campaign.
All right. Who cooked the Thanksgiving breakfast that George W. Bush served?
A bunch of enlisted people that had to get up at about 3 in the morning, maybe earlier.
Probably not. You know who did?
Who?
Kellogg Brown and Root. That's the Halliburton subsidiary that supplies the food.
Oh, no. Brown and Root. Halliburton, God, I wonder what they charge. Jeez, I'd hate to see that table.
Absolutely. Thanksgiving.
They tip the wait staff?
Yeah, Thanksgiving dinner at $200 a plate, probably. Thank you for calling.
Adios.
I appreciate it. All right, and hey, we're bad. We're nationwide. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Billy in Santa Cruz. Billy, welcome to the Night Call Show.
Uncle Peter, great to hear you.
Well, thank you, sir. Well, how's everything out there? It's like 28 degrees here. How's everything in Santa Cruz, California?
It's sort of rainy and dreary, and my back is good.
Good. Well, no. I mean, good. Not good your back's out, but
I think if I start taking enough painkillers, maybe I'll be more talented on the radio like somebody we know.
Just don't start buying them in parking lots, and...
I don't have a maid I can send out to do that for me, Peter.
Now, what about these criminal investigations of Rush Limbaugh? Is that all being just dropped?
He's a white man with money.
Yeah, he's safe. He's safe.
Yeah. And, the people who are so pro-law and order are his people. And, that's the funny thing about right-wingers and conservatives and mean people. It's only meant for others, not for them and they.
Sure. Well, they've become the Rat Pack. Were you listening last week? I was talking about that. Every one of them. I mean, Governor Gangbang out, your governor in California.
Hey, watch it.
Okay. We've got Pillhead Limbaugh, chief spokesman. Who else? Bill Bennett, who was the national scold.
Am I smoking the wrong weed, according to Bill Bennett?
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, you know, it's like he was addicted to cigarettes, but he hunts down people who smoke a different weed than he.
That's right.
Very confusing to a man like me who loves liberty and understands what the word freedom means.
Well, you know, they now, let me see if I have this here. Oh, I don't think I have it, but they asked, did you see that they asked all the candidates, Democratic candidates, had they ever smoked marijuana? And the ones that did said, yeah, I did. Yeah, you know.
None of them used the word experiment?
None of them used the word experiment.
Because I still have my lab coat hanging in the closet.
I actually did experiment with marijuana.
I did, too. I just wanted to see if you smoke enough, could it kill you?
Yeah, I did. That was my experiment as well. Didn't work. Fortunately, it didn't.
I heard that you were down in Miami.
I was down in Miami, yeah.
Why?
Well, we have the situation where Bush and the corporate elite are trying to essentially extend NAFTA to the rest of the hemisphere that's going to screw everyone everywhere, including us.
Now, did you know that got no coverage?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay, because I didn't even know it was. Honest to God, I didn't know it was happening. I really didn't.
Well, let me see if I have. Yeah, here I've got a couple articles. St. Petersburg Times. Miami crowd control would do tyrant proud. It's absolutely incredible. The New York Daily News, which is a right wing paper, is that a Murdoch paper?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
No, anyway, the Post is the Murdoch paper.
No, oh, you're right. Yeah. And it says, I don't even know who's written this, but it says, you probably haven't heard much about the violence that erupted in Miami last week.
No.
Yeah, and it says, John Sweeney, president of the AFL-CIO, is not known for making wild charges, but Sweeney was stunned by police actions during last Thursday's labor protest against a free trade conference of Western Hemisphere nations. He condemned the cops as using unjustifiable use of intimidation and force. Many of them against his union members, many of them senior citizens. They were gassing senior citizens.
You know, it's nostalgic for me. It reminds me of the good old days because I'm a young man. I was at the Democratic convention when, you know, there were police riots.
Yeah, well, this was a police riot as well, even though they contained it in many ways within these military formations. Yeah, they were the police there. 2,500 of them were in Kevlar armor. They had tanks. Tanks were patrolling the street because they said anarchists were going to come to the city and ruin it. Every building was surrounded, downtown was surrounded by 10-foot fences and anti...
You know, the problem, of course, is that there are real anarchists, or not even anarchists, but just people who want to make trouble. And the fact is, though, that in a society that doesn't allow for regular, peaceful protests to occur, you can't differentiate.
Well, here's
you make a criminal out of everybody that way.
Yeah, well, here's what happened in Miami. The cops, who were all dressed up with nowhere to go, began attacking the union people. And these anarchist kids, you know, 17 to 22 or 23 years old, because after that age, you start thinking, wait a minute, here's some 40-year-old guy with a 3-foot club, and you go the other way. These kids go, you know, right at him, although... I mean, it was amazing. I don't think any of these anarchists weighed over 140, no matter how tall they were.
They're all vegetarians.
And they were all vegetarians. Yeah, watch it. I'm a vegetarian.
I know.
And I weigh way over 140. Anyway, so they stood up to the cops, and, you know, the cops kicked their ass. But in the most, aggressive way imaginable.
Which is what it was like back then, my friend, when we were protesting the war in Vietnam. You know, it's coming to a head. The right wing, which is really not about anything else than trying to kill off the 60s people and what we believed in, and that's what this whole thing, this culture war, is really all about.
Sure. Here's
going to take war in the streets.
How about this? 100 demonstrators were treated for injuries. So essentially what you had is you had these RoboCops that looked like something out of either the first Star Wars or if you saw the film Brazil. 40-year-old guys in full armor kicking the crap out of kids in flip-flops, T-shirts, and shorts. I mean, these there's some. Let me see if I can't. I got so many things here. I can't even put my hand.
Did you run into any trouble with the police yourself?
Well, I walked out of this stadium. There was an amphitheater. We were with Jalene Jordan, who was there, a niece of the Prime Minister of Trinidad, who actually looked at the cops and said, well, they were all dressed up with nowhere to go in her British accent, and a couple of other union friends as well. But here, let me, 100 demonstrators treated for injury. So you had these cops that were ready for war, sitting on tanks with guns aimed at retirees, tear gassing these retirees, and then essentially just started beating the crap out of everybody.
I think it's the same mob that the Republicans hired when they didn't like people actually counting all the votes in Florida. Remember that?
Yeah.
The rent-a-mob.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking for this one. Oh, wait a minute. Here it is. This is the key to it all. This is in the. Let me see, in the St. Petersburg Times, Robin Blumner, Times Perspective columnist, and says, 8 of 60 guild observers, this is the National Lawyers Guild, they had people that were clearly marked as legal observers, and the cops arrested them. They wore distinctive green hats and were apparently targeted. When Swanson, whoever this is, Miles Swanson, 25 years old, a legal observer, he was grabbed off the street by 3 Broward County Sheriff's deputies, two of whom were in ski masks.
Oh, God.
And they told him...
What's the difference between this and the disappearing squads of South America?
Yeah, well, here's what they said. This is what you get when you F with us.
Exactly.
Now, this...
I thought it's my right as an American to F with anybody I want.
Yeah. Now, here is what essentially this has all come down to. That if you protest against the policies of this right-wing government, you are an enemy of the state. Rather than someone exercising, as you were indicating, Billy, their constitutionally guaranteed and also important duty as a citizen to say no to power.
Not anymore, you see. When you're put in by God, then it's a sacrilege to disagree with the president. This president literally believes that he is meant to be there by God. He's the kind of rude little piece of crap that would shout at Dick Gephardt because he wasn't wearing his jacket in the Oval Office. You put that jacket on right now.
He said that?
He did. I just heard, Daschle. Was talking about his book on book notes on C-SPAN, and told this little story.
Well, let me really scare you, and then I got to go to my spots.
An ugly little man.
This is from a right-wing news site, which I'm not even going to give. Is that bad? I mean, there's too many. I mean, they get too much free publicity.
Say MoveOn.org is a good website.
Yeah.
Leave it there.
General Tommy Franks, remember Tommy Franks?
Oh, yeah.
Led the invasion of Iraq, says that if the United States is hit with a weapon of mass destruction that inflicts large casualties, the Constitution will likely be discarded in favor of a military form of government.
You remember I told you this was going to happen 2 weeks after Bush was in office. Nixon looked into this at one point. You can call off elections, especially if there's just a little bit of terrorism right before the elections. You can say it's not safe to hold elections. We've got to hold it off.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's the point. Is nobody who looks at this guy thinks he's beyond pulling a stunt like that.
Well,
Karl Rove would love it.
George Bush has said on 4 separate occasions, a dictatorship is his favorite form of government, and then he laughs like he's only kidding.
I saw one of those pieces of tape.
Well, let me just say the rest of the, or tell you the rest of this. This is in Cigar Aficionado, the December edition, so it's out right now. And the former commander of the Military Central Command warned that if terrorists succeeded in using a weapon of mass destruction against the U.S. or one of our allies, it would have catastrophic consequences for our cherished Republican form of government, with a small r. Now, get this. Frank said, quote, the Western world, the free world, loses what it cherishes most if this happens, and that is freedom and liberty we've seen for a couple hundred years in this grand experiment.
Oh, please, it's not an experiment.
That we call democracy.
We give it away. Only we can give away our own freedom. They can do terrorism all they like to us, but only us can call martial law to ourselves. So let's, if they're dying to do it, then why don't they just say so?
Yeah. Frank says he is the first high-ranking official to openly speculate that the Constitution could be scrapped in favor of a military form of government.
You know, they call that a tryout. They try the idea out. They
trial balloon.
Somebody to say, and if people don't react too badly, and I guess they're not so far.
Billy, I got to go.
Bye, buddy.
Thank you, sir. Billy from Santa Cruz, California. You can call from anywhere in the United States. 313-298-WRIF. Bush's turkey breakfast, Thanksgiving breakfast. It was served to the American people. Just another big stunt. Your comments, please.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Cyber Crew. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff on-air giveaways.
Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air.
Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today.
Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream.
It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too.
To WRIF.com.
More Riff Rock is coming right up.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Amigos and Taylor in Woodhaven.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's five best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talk with rock and roll tennis pro Luke Jensen. It wasn't long before we all start talking about his brother Murphy.
What's up with your brother? Just because he knocks up Robin Givens doesn't know it means.
Blow, man.
That was actually a cheap shot, and I'll apologize for it. Murphy did impregnate Robin Givens. That is true. Luke's
beautiful baby boy, 3 years old.
And is she now your sister-in-law?
She is. No, they are not married.
Are they together?
No, they're not together.
Ooh. Oh. Yeah. Was it even close?
No. Not even close.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Riff. Rocks.
Twice.
Is nice. Tuesday on the Riff.
Everyone, listen up.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Two for Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock band.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Two for Tuesday.
Double the Riff Rock.
Double the Riff Prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Two for Tuesday on the Riff. For 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
If it really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's a Riff.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Antonio's Cucina Italiana, with three locations in Farmington Hills, Dearborn Heights, and Dearborn.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roach, put your best pace and body forward with help from Dr. Roach.
Log on today and save with the home of rock and roll at WRIF.com.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
I think, by God, Bush can't finish his job. He was aimed to take care of his dad's problems. Didn't finish that in 91. And he damn sure ain't got this sumbitch finished now.
No, no, it's going to take a long time.
I mean, you know what I'd do, hell. I'd split that son of a bitch wide open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'd use them bomb planes and bombs, and I'd have everybody scared to look up.
But you know, the thing of it is, after all is said and done, we still don't have Saddam Hussein. Can you believe it?
I don't know if they're supposed to have his sons, but...
Oh, duh, you don't think they got his sons necessarily?
Who knows whether it's his sons or not.
Did you see the pictures of them?
Yeah, I seen the pictures of them, but all them sons bitches look alike. Just picture one and turn him sideways, he'll look like half a dozen more.
Drew,
that sounds good.
And Mike, in the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
You're listening to 101 WRIF Detroit, a greater media station broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. There's more Riff Rock coming right up, so don't go anywhere.
The Emerald Ball.
The Emerald Ball.
The Emerald Ball.
Kick your club life into overdrive. Jumpstart your weekend at the Emerald. The Emerald Ballroom in downtown Mount Clemens, where sight and sound are combined to thrill your senses in one of the most unique rooms in the Motor City. Each and every Friday night, join the Riff's Carolyn Stone and DJ Rubik's Cube, along with over 1,000 partygoers, and see for yourself why the Emerald Ballroom stands out above the rest. From the VIP lofts overlooking their spacious dance floor, to the Rock Room, and the numerous watering grottos in between, cover the room in style Friday nights at the Emerald Ballroom. With 101 WRIF. The Emerald Ballroom, 31 North Walnut Street, downtown Mount Clemens. It's Detroit's biggest Friday night dance party.
The Emerald Ballroom.
With the station where the weekend never ends.
Riff Rocks.
The Motor City's best rock station.
Documentary. And it's called Uncovered, The Whole Truth About the Iraq War. And the famed Hollywood director Robert Greenwald has produced this. And on December 7th, next Sunday, there's going to be nationwide showings in perhaps thousands of venues in people's homes. And if you want to find out about this, you can go to moveon.org. Moveon.org. Here's what Ben Birch writes us, and he's from the White Rose Society. Remember, that those are the folks that archive this show, so you can go to whiterosesociety.org. He says, Peter, Saddam Hussein is supposed to have a dozen body doubles. Why would we not expect that this is a body double for George W. Bush? Are our intelligence services so bad that they cannot find a double for Bush? Well, that could be. All right, let's take some calls. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing? I'm Blair from Mount Clemens, Michigan.
Hi, Blair.
I don't know where to start at. I disagree with you 100%. He's the president of the United States. He's going to a place to where he's going to get out. I mean, he has so much coverage around here, but he has to go in that late. He has to be snuck out of his ranch. If any word got out of it, obviously there's people strap bombs on their chest. No, it's just, it has to be. He couldn't go walk around and talk to average people. I mean, and what should we do about terrorism? I mean, what, 9/11, what are you supposed to do? I mean, if you said that stuff about Saddam Hussein in Iraq.
What's 9/11? What does 9/11 have to do with a war in Iraq?
It's a terrorist attack. I mean, where do we start at to end these people?
Well, wait. But the war against Iraq, the invasion, occupation of Iraq, didn't have anything to do with September 11th.
Well, yeah, but it's still, we're stopping terrorism.
It looks like we're creating terrorism. Hundreds of Americans have died because of this invasion.
How many people has Saddam Hussein killed?
Americans?
Of Americans, his own people.
Well, wait. Yeah, but, you know, he was a real bad guy. I mean, he was a creation in a lot of ways of the United States government, of Bush's father and Reagan. And, you know, he became a bad guy suddenly when it was inconvenient, when his administration became inconvenient. But, you know, there's things like international law, and the United States broke that. And Bush lied to all of us, Blair. He told us that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, that if we didn't invade, even though it was breaking the rules of the United Nations, that we would be immediately subjected to an attack by these weapons of mass destruction. Well, there were no weapons of mass destruction, and they knew it. So this whole thing then about he was a terrible guy was made up after the fact. Remember, there, you know, you got to have a memory. I mean, that goes back more than a few days. And what the debate in the United Nations was about was continuing to have these inspections go on. And countries like France said, oh, let them go on another month. That's, you know, these horrible French guys. They wanted to let inspections go on another month. Well, the reason that Bush invaded, the reason that all of these Americans are dead, all these Iraqis are dead, that more people than ever hate us, is because Bush lied to the American people. It's that simple. Okay, nothing to say? All right, here's a song. Let's see, I don't know if I can just push this button, but this is Bob Rivers. Bob Rivers does these parody songs, and we were talking about Pillhead Limbaugh. Here he is. Yep, no, I got to press this.
Well, I was in the car and I heard this guy. He sounded all shook up and he told me why. His voice was a shaking on the EIB. Sounded like an Oxycontin eater to me. It was a bug-eyed, tone-deaf, flying Oxycontin eater.
Right-wing syndicated, spinning liberal people beater.
Right-wing, strung-out, hypocrite, prescription cheater. Rush looked strange to me.
That guy?
Well, his housekeeper picked up some drugs on the street. And she brought the stuff home for the boss to eat. I heard him say in a voice so gruff,
I tried to quit twice, but it was just too tough.
He was a big mouth, blowhard, right-wing propaganda reader.
Bad kiss or bad 30-dose of
inhaler. A three-time retread, frequent petty Ford repeater. Still looks high to me.
One more time.
I said to Mr. Oxycontin guy, the show sounds fine. I see you beating up on liberals using half your mind. So what's the real reason that you're in rehab?
I want to get my job back and slam McNab.
Well, bless his soul, no control, former jelly donut eater. Dope, stashing, flinching, fashion, flying, Oxycontin eater. Fired color commentator, what a sight to see. After 30 short days, well, what do you know? He pops back up on his radio show. He was preaching away to the ditto heads, while his maid faced the music cause he sang to the feds.
I am not a victim in this. Criminals like this should be put in jail, off the streets. They're the worst kind of offenders. I blame Hillary Clinton. She's the reason for all this. I should have stuck with tequila.
Oh, they want to do it again. Sorry. Bob Rivers, Twisted Tunes. You should be able to just go online and find that. Is that where it is? No, that's not. It's actually too long a website. But if you just do a search for Bob Rivers, Twisted Tunes, you'll get the Oxycontin Eater, the Twisted Purple Oxycontin Eater. Why do you think they call him Rush? All right, let's go to our phones. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, make a day to us, Peter.
Well, thank you.
Okay, Chip Willie would turn over in his grave. We heard that.
Is that who did that song?
Originally.
The
Purple People Eater.
Reminded Sheb, what was his name?
Sheb Woolley.
Sheb Woolley.
Yeah, it was on MGM Records.
That's right.
Okay, now I've got a little comment to make here. I heard this pill popping man that you just played tribute to, which actually I think that's a little too kind for him even.
Yeah.
But he had made some comment earlier. Now that he's made his big comeback, he says he cannot see why we shouldn't elect George W. Bush because he is the incumbent and we are in war. We are at war. And he says a president running the nation during time of war should be automatically reelected.
No.
That has got to be, you know, because he was comparing Bush to Franklin Roosevelt and Abraham Lincoln. Now, come on.
Yeah, I mean,
this war that's on now wasn't even a declared war.
No.
This is, you know, I mean, this war here is something that was made up by these chicken hawks. That's a good name for them, chicken hawks.
Guys that could have fought in Vietnam but scammed out of it because they didn't want to risk their booties and let other people do it for them.
But they didn't know who was they. And Bush, if I remember this, Bush says, we don't know who did this. He said this on September 11th. We don't know who did this, but we will find out.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, they're just getting into this thing, and then all of a sudden Saddam Hussein's a good target. Now, I believe my own opinion. I think this stuff, a lot of this is done with our own people that want to get this new world order going.
Well, they
I mean, there's something funny behind this whole thing, Peter.
Well, did you hear that piece I read about Tommy Frank saying if there is another attack on the United States, it could end the U.S. Constitution?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and I think, as one of our callers said, that very frequently things like this are trial balloons. So you've got Tommy Franks, a decorated general, saying that the Constitution could be scrapped in favor of a military form of government.
Oh, yeah, and Hillary, I'll tell you, people think it's going to be better with Hillary in there. She's another one that's in favor of changing things around.
You think so?
I believe so, yeah.
Well, she's not one of my faves. The only, in many ways, the thing I like about her the most, it would just drive the right-wingers crazy. And so you would get Hillary as president, and then you'd have to invite Bill back into the White House. Yeah. Again, she wouldn't be my first choice. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. Here, Peter wrote in, not me, another Peter, wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Because, so here are all these stunts, all these spectacles being performed for the rubes by these manipulators, these politicians, and these media whores, right? And yet, what is important, really, is our lives. Now, here's what Peter writes. College is being priced out of the reach of the middle class. I have the feeling that this is a conscious plan of the right to restrict the middle class from gaining an education, not only better themselves financially, but also to be exposed to the wider world and become thinkers. Well, I don't know if they have any big plan, but it's certainly not going to be available to as many people as we previously hoped. All of this stuff that was expanding, like the idea that more and more people could achieve a higher education, that's going down the tubes. I mean, Peter, the money just isn't there. When every college in almost in the country has to increase its tuition, I don't know if you can call it a right-wing plot, but it comes out of what the right wing does. It's a conscious or unconscious. That's what happens, because when the important qualities that define our lives are restricted more and more, because all of our tax dollars go not to us. And I know what you're going to say. Or you think I'm going to say, you're going to say, well, no, they're going over to the Iraqis. Not going over to the Iraqis at all. So when George W. Bush has this phony Thanksgiving breakfast that he serves to troops at 6 in the morning for a big photo op, I mean, something like that. Who gets the money? Halliburton. Who's Halliburton connected with? Dick Cheney. This is a country that's going to be by the corporations, of the corporations, and for the corporations. Why did I say it's going to be? It is now. It's a total racket. It's not an economic and political system anymore. And if we get to the point where George W. Bush is going to lose for the second time, if George W. Bush is going to lose the presidency of the second for the second time, look for the October surprise, October 2004. And here we have what could happen. General Tommy Franks, a weapons of mass destruction attack on the U.S. will end our Constitution. Now, why would that be? Because it seems possible, given the dedication, that if the intent was there, that determined men could do almost anything to us. Because we see, we've used this example before, in Israel, with all the security, with all the intelligence, with all the brutality and oppression, they're still suicide bombers. So why couldn't that happen here? It could. And the idea then would not be to shut down our society and institute military rule. Why would it? Why would military rule secure us anymore? I mean, geez, you go to a shopping center, they look in your bags. This would be an excuse for doing what the right always wants, dictatorship. 313-298-WRIF. Well, let's go back to our phones. Hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
How you doing? I really enjoy your show.
Well, thank you.
I'm from the Detroit area, and I'd like to say that, even though that this whole war is over money and oil,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, deep down inside, I mean, you can't say that you have, you cannot give the guy credit for rolling down there in the wee hours of the morning at 5 o'clock in the morning when we've known that our planes have been shot down in that area at all times of the day, for one. Two, he took a huge, huge risk, and he left our nation naked. He left our nation naked as a leader and went down there to risk. And how many people were there? 800, 600?
600, yeah. Little, oh, I thought you were coming from...
shelter area,
yeah.
They have going on down there. The point of the matter is that, you know, our Constitution and our civil liberties are being broken here because of this war. And, you know, I mean, we have people that are good, abiding citizens that are of different nationalities here that... You know, their civil liberties are getting broken every day. You know, I mean, they might look suspicious, but yet they have their kids in the back seat. And I've seen them getting pulled over here in Canton, Michigan. You know, it's just, it's ironic to me. And, you know, it did touch my heart a little bit to see him, you know, take his own life, you know, up there in the plane, man. It could have got shot down just out of, you know, they could have seen it any time.
So you're, so are you?
I am totally saying that. You know, George Clinton or Bill or
now George Clinton. Well, I can get behind,
yeah,
George Clinton. Bring on George Clinton.
No,
Funkadelics. Yeah.
George Bush. You know, he put his own self out there. So in the, I feel for him, but you know, I'm a working American that, you know, struggles to make ends meet, but yet I see my leader go there and risk his life just to say hi to 800 people and to blow our nation's head up.
Yeah, so...
You know, but it is also over money, too, so it gives conflict and different interests for people, you know, and it confuses people when he does
sure.
shit like
so
that.
Sure. So what you're saying is it's not just a stunt. It was a dumbass stunt.
It was.
Wow, yeah.
He left our nation naked.
I never thought about that. Well, listen, I got to get right to my commercials, but that is...
He left our nation naked, because if he did get shot down there, where would we be now?
Dick Cheney and Halliburton.
Yeah. Dick Cheney, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. I hadn't thought about that. So I'm saying it's a stunt, this breakfast, this Thanksgiving breakfast, served by Halliburton. That's who, you know, that's who's contracted to serve this food, prepare this food. I'm sure it's probably $100 a plate. But our last caller was saying that it was a dumbass stunt. And, I mean, think about the risk involved for what? So you could fall in on 600 guys. So it wasn't about that. It was about beguiling you and I. It was about you and I watching, believe that the Lions won, you know, taking in between time and, you know, fun to watch Miami pummel Dallas, right? But that risked his life in that manner, having to fly in. I mean, you look at it one way, you say, God, was he brave? Man, was he dumb? Was he dumb? Now, I had somebody that wrote in to me, said they were a 17-year-old conservative. I've lost the... particular letter. So I'm sorry, I don't know the name. But they sent it into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And he said one of the things that he supported the Republicans for was that they supported smaller government. This is just another example of smoke and mirrors. The Republicans do not support smaller government. What they support is the ordinary middle class and working class and poor person getting any real big buck back for the taxes that we put in. Now, this, how about this? Brian Riedel, it must be Riedel, Brian Riedel, a budget analysis at the Conservative Heritage Foundation. These guys are real right wing. Said the government spending per household in the fiscal year that ended September 30th was $20,000 per household, highest level since World War II. So government spending per individual household is the highest that it's been since World War II under George W. Bush. Now, if you could tell me that, and you could say that we had beautiful cities, no poor people, a national health program, everybody with full, you know, medical, dental, you know, everything we needed, eyeglasses, that was what that was all going for, I'd probably say, cool. I wouldn't say probably, I'd say very cool. But this is going to the big war machine, the big oil machine, to big government, to all these contractors that are at the pig's trough of the Homeland Security. That's where this money's going. I mean, some of you are paying $20,000 in taxes, maybe more, and you're not. You think you're getting it back? Uh-uh. Governor Granholm in Michigan is going around the state saying, where can we cut this? Where can we cut that? Where can we cut more? What will you cut? What do you want to cut? We don't want to cut anything. We want our money back. We don't want it to go to George W. Bush's favorite corporations, these polluters and pharmaceutical ripoff companies that know that the trough is open for them. The pigs are feeding. The people are suffering.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
A weekend of exceptional holiday values at J.B. Robinson Jewelers. It's our after Thanksgiving event. Now through Sunday, save $250 off the retail value of our beautiful diamond and tanzanite ring, specially priced at just $149. Plus, save 25 to 60% off the regular and ticketed prices on a fantastic selection of jewelry. And every jewelry purchase is backed by our unconditional 90-day money-back guarantee. So come to JBR's after Thanksgiving event, now through Sunday.
When the
Robinson Jewelers, 9 convenient locations. Free financing for 1 year available. Minimum purchase and minimum monthly payments required.
As you know, the emerald ash borer, a new foreign invader, has killed or damaged millions of ash trees in southeast Michigan. I'm Dan Wyant, director of the Michigan Department of Agriculture, with an important message for southeast Michigan homeowners, hunters, campers, and travelers regarding what they can do to help prevent the spread of this new exotic pest. A quarantine prohibiting the movement of ash trees and ash products, including any type of firewood, is in effect for 13 counties in southeast and mid-Michigan. Please adhere strictly to this quarantine and don't take firewood camping or on vacation with you. Simply put, it is illegal to move ash trees or ash products outside of this area. Firewood or ash trees may not visibly look infested. By transporting these items, you could unknowingly spread this pest. For more information, contact the state's toll-free hotline at 866-325-0023 or online at michigan.gov/MDA. This message brought to you by Michigan's Emerald Ash Borer Task Force.
Mr. Wagner went to pick up his wife's uncle at the airport.
She said he's short, wearing a white hat.
Short?
So he picked up the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Don't you think I would have told you if my uncle was the Pillsbury Doughboy?
I had no idea what he was.
I would have sent you a picture, but this camera phone thing is just too complicated.
Here, Mrs. Wagner. Sprint made picture mail right. It's easy to take and send pictures anywhere on the complete wireless network because they built it from the ground up.
Thanks.
No problem. Mr. Doughboy, may I?
Go ahead. Everyone else does.
Now get two PCS Vision picture phones with built-in cameras, VGA 1000s by Samsung, for $149.98 after instant or mail-in savings. PCS from Sprint, the clear difference in wireless.
Instant savings at Sprint stores and Radio Shack. 2-year agreement with picture mail service required. Activation and termination fees apply subject to credit. Not available everywhere. Network covers over 240 million people. See stores for details.
This Monday is the last day of 1 week to deal at your Chrysler and Jeep superstores. So buy before December 1st and make no monthly payments until April. Or lease and pay no security deposit. And if you act now during the year-end sales drive, you can get an additional $500 holiday cash bonus. That means for the first time ever, you can get up to $4,500 in total cash allowances on select 04 vehicles or choose 0% APR financing. But 1 week to deal ends Monday. So get to your Chrysler and Jeep superstores today. Financing for qualified buyers through Chrysler Financial. Excludes Crossfire and Town & Country EX. Interest accrues from date of purchase. See dealer for delayed payment details. $500 to $4,500 cash allowances. Include $500 bonus cash allowances depending on model. You must take retail delivery by December 1st. Residency restrictions apply. Bonus cash offer excludes Wrangler, Sebring Sedan, Concord, and 300M. Jeep is a registered trademark of Daimler Chrysler.
As a football fan who drinks Miller Lite, your greatest passions in life are great-tasting low-carb beer and fantasy football. Some men's fantasy is to be shipwrecked with a sultry, limber cheerleader. Yours is to best your buddies with a hand-picked group of oversized men. You can recite every depth chart. You can reel off any stat. And if you could have billed the hours spent attaining this knowledge, you could have purchased a real franchise. You did more research for your draft than an antitrust lawyer. And when you landed your sleeper in the 12th round, you proudly declared it the greatest day of your life. Miller Lite realizes this ain't no hobby. It's an obsession where your worst fear is having your stud player carted off the field. His knee is shattered as your dreams of making the fantasy bowl. Yes, fantasy footballer, you are as passionate about your craft as Miller Lite is about giving you great-tasting low-carb beer. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
Thanks a lot. Welcome back. WRIF Detroit is our official designation. And, hey, I guess we're not streaming, so you can go to whiterosesociety.org and go through there, but... I guess if you're somewhere where you have to hear me through the internet, you're not going to hear this. Here's what Bruce is always fooled. Bruce wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He's an entry in our game show, How Dumb Can You Be? He says, what the hell is wrong with you? All of us Americans celebrated Thanksgiving this week. If you're just joining us, we were talking about this this dumbass stunt that Bush pulled by flying into Baghdad. I just said it was a stunt. I mean, it didn't have anything to do with the troops or what have you. It essentially was broadcast to the American people to deal with his flagging popularity. These Republicans are always running for re-election. That's why Bush is coming in here today, Monday, to pick up another $2.5 million in campaign funds, contributions from his rich buddies. And but it turned out that this meal that was put together by Kellogg Root and Brown, the Halliburton subsidiary, Cheney's company, was served at 6 a.m. So these guys are eating turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes and you know, beer and stuff like that. What do they call it? Non-alcoholic beer at 6 a.m. They got awakened like at 5, and so they were props in a stunt, just like it was on that USS Abraham Lincoln. That was a stunt, and the boat was a stunt. It was a prop rather. Yeah, that was when mission was accomplished. So Bush flies in, and why it was a dumbass stunt, according to our last caller, and I agree 100%, it endangered the President of the United States. For what? So he can talk to 600 men that shouldn't be there and women that shouldn't be there in the first place? Now, here's what Bruce says. You go to the mall, and we see all the families enjoying their lives and focusing on what's really important. What's that, Bruce? Shopping? We're happy. Things are good. People have money. The economy, despite what you refuse to admit, is turning around big time, and we're all living the great American dream. Well, we're not all. You know what, Bruce? I am. And he says down here, you use your vacation time to go and protest the man, because I went down to these Miami protests against the free trade area of the Americas. You know, I haven't been hurt during this whole period, and for a lot of reasons, but enough people have. There's tens of millions. Well, let's go up to a lot more than that. I mean, the government admits there's, what do they think, like 40, what is that? I can't remember the figures. I'll give you the low one. 45 million poor people in this country. And it's probably double that if you had any reasonable figures. The unemployment figures are really probably another 2% more than what they say they are. And even in the New York Times, where I was reading from earlier, it uses the line, with the economy growing again at a robust pace and starting to generate new jobs, industrial jobs, manufacturing jobs, were lost. More, I think there were 17,000 in American industrial jobs. And these are the jobs among working class and lower middle class people that allow people to have a middle class standard of living. So there's Bruce at the mall doing what makes us happy, shopping, and all these other people are what? How are they happy? Because, it's a cheery season and what have you. Well, this country is awash in debt, Bruce. It has the highest level of debt of any country in the world. And, you know, someone's going to pull the bottom card out. I'm not saying it's going to happen. Yeah, and I certainly wouldn't like to see it happen. But this recovery is fueled a lot on debt. And so it's a house of cards, really. In the long run, according to the Times, the government faces rising interest costs from the increasing level of debt it is amassing. Debt held by the public, the portion of the total national debt generated by year-to-year budget deficits, currently stands at about $4 trillion. And you have to remember this, too. All the debt that all of us have is owned by rich people. Some of them here, some of them abroad. A lot of the treasury bonds, of course, that allow the government to operate at a deficit now that Bush has driven us into being a debtor nation, these bonds are owned by foreign banks. And, you know, there's any point that these investors feel that we're a bad risk, like personal debt gets too high, well, the rug gets pulled out from under us. Oh, yeah. I was saying, too, well, I mean, what we have is the spectacle of rich people loaning poorer people money at a high interest rate. I mean, that's what credit cards are. I mean, some rich guy, you know, that owns a bank, a stock in a bank, is loaning you and me money. So all of this stuff, year-to-year budget deficit, trillion national debt, you go, boy, that's boring. Well, depending on how old you are, this is going to have different impacts on you. If you're in your 60s, you worked for a company that had a pension plan. Oh, what? They used to have one, but it went away? Well, you may have a 401k. Oh, well, you lost 80% of it, like a neighbor of mine did? Hard-working union man? You know, Bruce, if you go to countries like Mexico with a high proportion of poverty-stricken people. In fact, Mexico City now has like 25 million people in it. That's not the country. That's how many people are in Mexico City. Great numbers of them living in shanties on top of garbage dumps. But you can go to the middle-class and upper-class Mexican areas in Mexico City, and you go to malls, and you can see all the families enjoying their lives and focusing on what's really important. They're happy. Things are good. I'm reading from his letter now. So anyone with a sense of justice, so he mocks me, too, for using my vacation time to go and protest, quote, the man. What the man is doing, the trade ministers from the countries of this hemisphere met to decide, are they going to allow NAFTA to destroy more jobs, more of the environment, take away more of our national sovereignty? Hello, conservatives, remember this, the last one. I know you don't care about the first two. And this is going to have an impact, you know what? Not on me. And, I want to blow my horn about something like this, but, you know, Bruce, I have a conscience. I can't live well knowing there's people living like crap that don't have to. That the wealthy corporate owners and the wealthy elite of this country and this world immiserate the lives of billions. When none of them have to experience what they are. There doesn't have to be an AIDS plague of 40 million people. There doesn't have to be 20 million people a year actually starving to death. There doesn't have to be hundreds of millions of people around the world going to bed hungry every night, including in the U.S. There doesn't have to be people that die every year in this country because there's no medical insurance. And the only time they ever go to a doctor is when they have to go to the emergency room because they've been stricken. The world can be better. Another world is possible. But the conservatives, the Bruces of the world, the George Bushes of the world, they want it just like this. Because you go to the malls and see all the families enjoying their lives and focusing on what's really important. We're happy. Things are good, says Bruce. Well, you know, if I kept my eyes shut, I could say the same thing. Where are we going? Thank you, Mr. Fox. Although I looked at your hands, I didn't see what... thank you, sir. All right. All right. When is WRF moving to the new building? Isn't it like April? Then we get our computers? Great. Hi, Night Call, and you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I've been waiting patiently here.
Well, thank you.
I just want to say that the riff rocks, and we are on our way back from Aerosmith right now.
Oh, man, and Kiss. What a great concert that must have been.
Oh, it was awesome. And I did. We were just listening, and I just wanted to, you know, say that you put on a couple good points through your show here, and I'm, you know, we had a little ride home here, and we're listening, and you got some really good points. But I want to say that I do support our troops, and I do support our country, and everything that the president is doing, because this is a country that we live in, and
well,
we have.
Yeah, but Bush has messed everything up.
He is.
Well, he's got us in a war that he told us was necessary because Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. He lied about that. He doesn't have any. And now he's got us in a war where hundreds of Americans are getting killed. He goes in there for this political stunt, and as soon as he leaves, 15 more people get killed.
Yeah, Peter, I guess where I see the light is just to say, you know what? Where our country was founded on the principles of moral principle and making a stand for our freedom and what we stand for. And I believe that that's what Bush is doing, and that's what he's doing. And I
think he's trying to get oil and trying to get reelected. Look, there's there's these international law that governs such things as an invasion of another country. And George W. Bush made this country a rogue nation. He said that he was not going to follow what the United Nations said. So he went off on an illegal war. That's what tyrants and dictators do. That's not what free countries do.
Yeah, but Clinton finished it. His dad didn't finish it. So now he's got to do the job, right?
No, I don't think he's got to do the job when hundreds of Americans have been killed and thousands of Iraqis have been killed. That's not a hell of a job. That's a damn slaughter. All right, thank you. Got a job. That ain't a job. All right, people are writing in all over the country. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. That in fact, we are streaming, and there's this long Mac URL that tells you how to do it. It's way too long for me to say on the air. I should post it, I suppose. But thank you, Digger. He says, others from the Democratic Underground are listening now. And that's democraticunderground.com. Democraticunderground.com. I mean, people so blithely say, oh, it's a job to do. Well, damn. You know, hundreds of people, thousands, let's say that every life is sacred. So George Bush has presided over the deaths of maybe 10,000 people. Americans and Iraqis. Most people in this country only care about Americans. But somebody that cares about people understands that thousands of people have been killed. All for a massive lie. And you know what? Saddam Hussein's days were probably numbered. As it was, remember that was the other thing that's come out recently. I mean, first and foremost, George W. Bush lied to the American people, lied to the world about the necessity for the invasion. It wasn't about finishing the job. It wasn't about freeing Iraq. It was about that we were in imminent danger, his word, imminent danger from attack by Iraq. And he had all these stories about they had hundreds of tons of chemicals ready to go, that they had ships circling the world with planes that could bomb the heartland of the U.S. This was all made up. But everybody's got a memory that lasts about 30 days or sometimes 3 days. So Bush lied. And then, you know, the rationale changes. In the meantime, it's real easy to say, oh, he's got a job to do. Well, I remember what I was going to say. That also, it turns out that Saddam Hussein was saying, hey, let's make a deal. I'm going to let Americans in. I can let American Marines in to check to make sure that we don't have any weapons of mass destruction. And he also said that contrary to Iraqi law, that he was going to allow American oil concessions because he knew what it's all about. He knows that the United States over the last 100 years has supported every lousy dictatorship that has come down the line as long as it would support American corporate interests. He knew that for all of George W. Bush's posturing, that it was only about oil and an empire. So he was saying, hey, come on, I'm going to let you in because, you know, I want to preserve my rule here. Well, Bush thought, well, you know, why just take a piece of pie when you can take the whole pie? Why not have a petroleum garrison out in the Middle East that's directly controlled by the United States, occupied by the United States 6,000 miles from home? The Iraqi people are going to welcome us. Yeah, are they welcoming us? What they welcome is another ambush of an American Humvee that once the our soldiers inside are killed, that they can loot the vehicle. This is what George Bush, this is the job that he was supposed to you know, to do. Okay, where are we going? Line four? Thank you, sir. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, hi. I'm Kenny Gleason from Woodhaven, Michigan.
Yeah.
And I completely disagree with you. You're all, everyone, all these liberals are calling in and saying all this cause and effect stuff. And what do you think George Bush should have done on Thanksgiving?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe. What do I think he should have done? He should have resigned, but I don't know. I mean, he flies in. I mean, do you dispute this, that it was done purely as a publicity stunt?
No, George Bush is awesome. He's my hero.
Why is he your hero? He's a guy that scammed out of the draft in Vietnam because he, you know, his daddy was rich. He had all these failing businesses. The American people rejected him in the popular vote, and the only reason he got to sit in the White House is because he has his dad's friends on the Supreme Court. What the hell is to admire?
Well, George Bush, well, what do you think he should have done on Thanksgiving that you didn't tell me?
Well, I don't know what he should have done. I told you, he should have resigned. He should have, you know, admitted to the American people that he stole the election and, you know, called for new elections or something. But what I really think that he could have done, maybe he could have been straight with the American people. Maybe he could have said, look, I've made a catastrophic mistake by invading Iraq. That this has led to the deaths, as I just said, of hundreds of Americans and thousands of Iraqis, and the situation is not getting better. It's getting worse.
Okay.
You think that he actually did not pull this off as a publicity stunt? Why would he serve Thanksgiving breakfast at 6 in the morning as opposed to doing it at 3 or 4? Because that would have then been in, you know, the late night in the United States. It was timed exactly to come to us as here is George W. Bush with the troops. Tear coming out of his eye. Come on.
Should he have stayed home all day? I mean, those troops served our country. They're whooping butt over there, serving this country.
But, you know, I don't even like your words, whooping butt. I mean, you know what? There's men and women coming home without faces, without legs, without guts, that are never going to walk again, that are never going to see again. We never see these thousands of wounded. I mean, why don't you get smart. Use some language that is a little precise in terms of what's happening there. War isn't a football game. It's a hideous activity that sometimes is necessary, but was absolutely unnecessary in this case.
Yeah, those people are serving our country, and all Bush tried to do was go over there and give them some Thanksgiving turkey because their family can't go over there, and they can't come back to their family. Because they're serving our country, because liberals like you won't do it. They're just sitting there crying, oh, everyone do everything for me.
Where do you get this crap from? How old are you?
13.
13. Man, yeah. Do yourself a favor. You ever been to my website? Where do you get these ideas from? What do you do? Listen to, like, Sean Hannity and stuff like that?
For one, my stepdad, he's a very smart man.
Well, if he's telling you this, he's not very smart. Why don't you go to my website, Peter Werbe, PeterWerbe, last name's Werbe, and listen to something a little different for once. You know, I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, the best way to support our troops is to get out of there. This should not be an American occupation force. It's an illegal occupation force. A country unilaterally cannot go over to another country, invade it, no matter what the reason is, unless it's about to be attacked. That's what Bush told us, and that was a lie. And turn this back over to United Nations force and let the people of Iraq have both their oil, because that's what Bush wants for his buddies, for his wealthy buddies. Are you rich?
Why would Bush want it for his buddies? He wants it for his country because he's a good man. How do you not think Bush is good? Bush is awesome.
Well, what is awesome? I mean, I told you before, he's like a rich, snotty kid. Are you rich?
No.
Okay. Well, you know what the rich think of people like you and me? We're just kind of cannon fodder and, you know, and kind of dog meat for their, you know, factories and for their, you know, their offices to make the money for them. But this is a guy that, you know, was born on third base, and he thinks he hit a triple. And everything he ever did in his life was engineered by his dad. Get him out of the draft. Get him into businesses, which he screws up every single time. Get him to run for, you know, the governorship of Texas with his buddies from Enron. Run for the presidency. He loses the presidency and somehow winds up sitting in the office. What the hell is to admire about that?
Can you please answer my question sometime today?
What about...
What should Bush have done?
I don't know. Maybe he should have prayed for peace.
Yeah, you don't know, because you don't know what you're talking about.
All right, goodbye. God, what a snotty kid. Well, yeah, I don't know. What did I say? I said Bush should resign. Bush should admit what a catastrophic error he made in Iraq. It, you know, he claims he's a Christian. Well, let him stay home and pray. Instead, he carries off this dumbass stunt where he risks his life. You know, I know what some of you are thinking, but remember who is one breath away, as Teddy Roosevelt said, you know, Dick Cheney, which means that Halliburton would directly rule the U.S., and all for publicity. Here's a 13-year-old kid that says George W. Bush is his hero? Whew. That's sick. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, hi, Peter.
Hi.
Bush, the first thing that he should have done, the president, that his father should have finished his job when he first went in. That's one thing that should have been done. Second thing, with the election, we should have had an emergency recall on all the votes instead of just having them, you know, one person decides, well, you won and you're sitting as our president. What he did for the troops, that was a good gesture. Yeah, it was stupid, but it was a good gesture. I thought it was. But the reason why we're in this war is not a factor now. The American people need to do is figure out a way to get our troops home. And obviously our president's doing it, trying to do it as quick as possible, setting in a government and everything over there, so we can get our troops out
well,
there.
Well, maybe, but, you know, we are, I think we're screwed one way or the other because of this, the arrogance and the undemocratic manner in which this government functions, that and contrary to all the advice that people that understood this, including, you read in his dad's book about why that, you know, that Saddam Hussein should not have been overthrown in 1991 and all of this, that we're stuck in this this deteriorating. It's not, you know, they keep saying, oh, things are getting better and better. Well, now they're actually involved in frontal warfare with guys in uniform. I mean, it looks like the U.S. took the day today and killed like 46 guerrillas. But this is every quality of Vietnam where, you know, the Americans keep saying, we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. We're going to be out of here soon. But you keep hearing more and more about more troops are needed. Well, there's not even more troops hardly available. I mean, these tours of duty are going on longer than anyone expected. The sincerity, I mean, since when did people start taking the promises of politicians about getting out? I mean, they keep talking about having 100,000 men in Iraq 2 years from now. All right, thank you. Appreciate your call. I was actually going to grab something, and I forgot what it was. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hi, this is Carl.
Hi, Carl.
I'd like to talk to you a little bit. There was a commentator on C-SPAN that called the GOP the party of the big whopper.
The party of the big whopper. I love it.
You were quoting from Voltaire four weeks ago or so, and he wrote a polemic, a short polemic.
Well, let's remind people, Voltaire was this advocate of democracy and liberty, a French who wrote in the 18th century.
Right. And he wrote a short polemic in French, it's the Periquet, P-E-R-I-Q-U-E-T, in case someone wants to look it up. It's a parrot who screeches out the official lies and policy of the church and state. And the victims of the parrot tree themselves become parrots for a good reason. It's the one to keep their health. But this brings us to the embedded whoppers, the willing victims, the bullshites and anal cystites, scabites, who scab and pimp in behalf of their betters.
Yeah.
The corporate criminals, war criminals, and even in their cognizance, they still think it's useful politically. Now, Gore Vidal, has a new book out. He was being interviewed, and he says there is a dictatorship of the elite in place right now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe so, and maybe that goes with Tommy Frank. I don't know. All right.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you very much. The Voltaire quote, I'll quote it again, and this goes for, this goes to the many of the, like the 13-year-old. Anyone who has the power to make you believe absurdities has the power to make you commit injustices. That's from Voltaire. Anyone who has the power to make you believe absurdities has the power to make you commit injustices. Or support him. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
How you doing, Peter? Where are we?
Doing good.
Yeah, well, I've been listening to you I'm calling from Detroit, and I listen to you every now and then. I work nights, and I can't disagree with you more on a lot of the stuff you talk about. A lot of the issues that you bring up are, I don't know where to begin, really, but I think Bush did a good job by going over there. I served 20 years in the Navy and did a couple tours in Bosnia.
No, and, but you got Bush as a draft dodger. Why in the hell would you support anybody like that?
So was Clinton.
Well, I know. That doesn't mean anything to me. I never was a big Clinton supporter.
I don't even think
so. In other words, you support draft dodgers, being a military man.
Well, I didn't support, he did his Air National Guard tour.
Yeah, but listen, why was he in the Air National Guard?
Well, there's a lot of guys that go in there.
Yeah, but you know what? There was a big line, and he got skipped over all these ordinary middle class and working class guys because his dad was a wealthy Texan, had money. I mean, go to awalbush.com and just see the shenanigans that got pulled in order to get him out of the Vietnam War. And how did he get in business? His daddy. And how, when he was doing insider insider stock trading, how come he didn't get prosecuted? His daddy. And how come he wound up to be the president of the United States? Because of his daddy. I mean, he's a rich guy. You're not a rich guy, are you?
No, I'm not. But, well, Clinton didn't do anything when he went into Bosnia. He didn't show up over there.
With Clinton. I mean, who cares about him? You know? We're talking about right now. I mean, I was ripping Clinton a new one when he was president.
About Hillary going over there for her possible run in a presidential race and Bush going over there to upstage her or whatever. I mean,
well, it's, a couple of craven politicians. You know, they've all got ambitions, and none of them cares about the average working man, and sure couldn't care less about you. All they're doing for you is cutting, particularly now, the Republicans and Bush, cutting VA benefits, and for the guys that are over there, cutting, what do they call them?
Yeah.
Combat benefits?
I did 20 years, and I've got some VA benefits, VA education, and insurance from the military.
I know, but they're cutting.
I haven't seen any. To me, I haven't seen any cuts in benefits coming in. I haven't received any letters that this is you're going to lose this benefit or that benefit.
No, it's not a matter of they're cutting the overall expenditures on veterans, including the veterans hospital. So they've done all these studies. The waits are longer. I mean the VFW and all those the American Legion are screaming bloody murder.
We all know the VA hospitals probably aren't the best hospitals.
Shouldn't they be the best?
Oh yeah, they should be, but they're I don't know. I've never been in one. I can't speak to say it's this service is bad, but every hospital you go to, there's problems with it.
Well, I know. You know why? It's because they're spending all their money carrying out unnecessary wars. That's where our tax money is going. It's going to Halliburton. It's going to the big arms manufacturer that Bush's father owns and what have you.
Well, I agree with the lady that spoke with earlier that came back from the Kiss Aerosmith concert.
That there are a couple of great bands.
Yeah. I think the job, you need to do something about the terrorism situation. I mean, look what's going on in in Israel and Palestine, and I think there is a connection between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein.
Well, Bush said there wasn't, so you disagree with him, which you're welcome to. I do. But the terrorism is being made worse. More people hate us, In a way, the hundreds of Americans that have been killed in this unnecessary war, an invasion against Iraq, it was this magnet, and it's increasing. I mean, the opposition there is increasing. So we've got ourselves in a situation where we might wind up having to build another wall.
What would have been a good solution to take care of Saddam Hussein?
Well, first off, when did it become the task of the United States to be the policeman of the world when our country still has such great needs? Saddam Hussein represented absolutely no threat to the United States whatsoever. We know now that the whole thing about weapons of mass destruction was untrue. Whether it was willful, as I think, in other words, they purposely lied, or whether it was just mistaken intelligence. So there, it was a situation where dictators have a way of crumbling, the way Ceausescu did in Romania, the way that, you were mentioning you're in Bosnia, the way Milosevic did in Serbia. And his power was getting more and more tenuous. There were more and more opposition forces. In fact, one of the reasons that Bush wanted to move so quickly, there was fear on their part that all of this would become unraveled, that inspectors would show that there were no weapons of mass destruction, which was the only rationale put forth by Bush. No one said anything about liberating him or finishing the job or terrorism or anything like that. It was all that we were facing imminent danger from a rogue country with weapons of mass destruction that could use them at any time against their neighbors or even against us. Well, to invade a country in violation of international law, specifically when the UN would not give its approval, and then wind up in this situation where we see our men and women being killed every day, where they are beginning, you mentioned Palestine, where the occupation forces there are beginning to act like any occupation forces do anywhere, very similar to the Israelis, bulldozing homes. They have prison camps over there for Iraqis, the United States does, that are in the same venues that Saddam Hussein held them. And the other day, there was a prison revolt. I couldn't even get much information about it. There was a few lines in the New York Times. And the United States troops just shot into the prison camp and killed three Iraqi prisoners, people that had not been adjudicated of any a crime or what have you. They were just in some mass internment. That's not freedom. That's not what the United States is called upon to do.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
Good morning. This is Ray Vinson of American Equity Mortgage. If you're hearing our message at this time, it's probably because you're at work, driving around, or can't sleep. If you can't sleep, I hope it's not because of money problems, but if it is a money problem, American Equity Mortgage can help. You're not alone. The average household has a credit card debt of $6,000 or more and paying a fortune in interest. You see, if you're a homeowner, you can use the equity in your home to consolidate all your bills and have only one payment. Think about that, just one new low monthly payment. Your equity can be used to pay off your auto loans, credit cards, and get a new low fixed rate on your mortgage. You will be saving hundreds of dollars each month. American Equity Mortgage specializes in homeowners with less than perfect credit. We have helped thousands of people just like you get back on track. You can call our office right now, and a loan specialist will call you first thing in the morning. That's American Equity Mortgage. Call toll-free, 888-71-LOAN-1, 888-71-L-O-A-N, then the number 1.
Hey, Night Owls. I know you want some delicious McDonald's food right now. Gary Graniter here, inviting you to my McDonald's in Southgate, located on 4th Street near Pennsylvania, in front of the Super Kmart. Our drive-thru is open all night to satisfy your late-night hunger. Have a juicy quarter pounder with cheese with our famous hot French fries. All of your favorites are right here. Really hungry? Make it a double. A double quarter pounder with cheese, that is. Or have a double cheeseburger for only $1 from our dollar menu. We're open 24 hours, 7 days a week. Dinner menu until 4 a.m., then breakfast. So check out McDonald's in Southgate tonight, a Granite Family Restaurant. I'm loving it when you're loving it. We are located on 4th Street near Pennsylvania.
Hello?
Hey, Bob. What are you doing, man?
I'm just leaving work. Why? What's up?
You should shoot across the border and meet me at Leopard's Lounge in Windsor. Dude, they have incredible girls from all over the world. And I'm telling you, these girls are hot.
Oh, man. I got to go across the border. I don't know.
Come on, you big baby. It's just 5 minutes from the Bridger Tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. And get this. At Leopard's Lounge, you don't even have to pay a cover charge. Ever. Plus, they even have free parking. You got to meet me there. They have these two girls from Romania. Bro, I'm telling you, they're the friendliest girls I've ever met. Heck, all the girls at Leopard's Lounge are friendly.
Wait a minute. Did you say no cover, free parking, and women from all over the world?
Bro, that's what I've been telling you. So, are you going to meet me up at Leopard's Lounge or what?
Dude, I'm so there. I'll see you in about half an hour. And hey, if you get there before me, tell the girls I'm on my way.
You got it. I'll see you at Leopard's Lounge.
Leopard's Lounge in Broil, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge in Broil.
This is another Riff Rock concert.
Every once in a while, there comes an exciting new musical genre that captures the heart and soul of millions of fans. Now, spend an evening with the most stirring and powerful blend of rock and classical music ever heard. Trans-Siberian Orchestra's Christmas Eve and Other Stories Live. Saturday, December 20th, the Palace of Auburn Hills. Critics have called it strikingly original, a timeless masterpiece, and breathtaking. You will call it sensational. Trans-Siberian Orchestra's Christmas Eve and Other Stories Live. Saturday, December 20th, the Palace of Auburn Hills. Reserve seat tickets are on sale right now. PalaceNet.com, the box office, Ticketmaster, charged by phone or online. Trans-Siberian Orchestra's Christmas Eve and Other Stories Live. CDs and DVD available now at all Target locations. Presented by WRIF.
Hey, Napoleon, where are you going?
I'm going to Waterloo to meet my enemies.
But you could get defeated if you go there.
Who cares? It's over for me anyway. My wife, Josephine, she's divorcing me. She has this tough lawyer who wants to take everything. My palace at Versailles, all the fancy medals I win.
Oh?
Even my faithful horse, Pierre.
Well, there's no reason for a man to lose his home, his children, his money, or his self-respect.
Oh?
Now, Adam is here to protect you. Adam is the American Divorce Association for Men.
Ah.
They're a group of highly qualified divorce attorneys and counselors who will defend the rights of men in any divorce case.
Ooh.
Adam will answer your questions about divorce at no charge. Call the American Divorce Association for Men.
Hello, this is Napoleon the Great speaking.
Who is that, you nappy dally?
Josephine, what do you want from me now?
Adam is handling your divorce.
Yes, so?
Well, maybe after you conquer the rest of Europe, we could have lunch. I mean, it's nothing to lose your head over.
Call Adam at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-ADAM.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. Hey, at 1 o'clock, I'm going to be airing a documentary. It's called Chile, Promise of Freedom. It's about the country, Chile. It's about the U.S.-engineered coup of that country. See, when people are saying we're over there to liberate the people, you got to look at the history of the United States. It's not good. It's not America. You and me are America. And its traditions, but the United States government has acted vilely, particularly under Republicans, but, Democrats have done their share as well. So this is about the coup of the democratically elected government of Salvador Allende in 1973. Now, remember that snotty kid who was said that George W. Bush was his hero? Well, Joel sent this in, and it's George W. Bush's resume, and this is really what we need because it's, Bush is so awful. I mean, many people have said he's the stupidest president that has ever occupied the office. I know some of you don't even like to have me call him the president. George W. Bush is the stupidest man ever to sit in the Oval Office. He's the worst by in any regard. But here, This is, well, it's got a lot of things. Bought an oil company but couldn't find any oil in Texas. The company went bankrupt shortly after he sold his stock. This was the insider trading thing. And his dad, Security and Exchange Commission folks investigated and found, gee, our boss's son didn't do anything wrong. Bush bought the Texas Ranger baseball team in a sweetheart deal that took land using taxpayer money. Biggest move, he traded Sammy Sosa to the Chicago White Sox. Good move there. With father's help and his name, he was elected governor of Texas. While there, he changed the pollution laws for power and oil companies and made Texas the most polluted state in the union. Replaced Los Angeles with Houston as the most smog-ridden city in America. Cut taxes and bankrupted the Texas government to the tune of billions in borrowed money. Set record for the most executions by any governor in American history. Became president after losing the popular vote by over 500,000 votes with the help of his father's appointments to the Supreme Court. What he's done so far, and I mean, I could do the rest of the show on this. What he's done since he's been president, attacked and took over two countries, spent the surplus and bankrupted the Treasury, shattered record for biggest annual deficit in history, set economic record for most private bankruptcies filed in any 12-month period. I mean, any of you people that like the 13-year-old, if George Bush is your hero and you think of any of these things isn't true, call 313-298-WRIF. He set the all-time record for the biggest drop in the history of the stock market. First president in decades to execute a federal prisoner. First president in U.S. history to enter office with a criminal record. First year in office set the all-time record for the most days on vacation by any president in U.S. history. After taking the entire month of August off for vacation, presided over the worst security failure in U.S. history. This is George W. You know, when people start talking about September 11th, you got to look real carefully about either the failure or the complicity of Bush and the Bush administration in all of this. 2 million Americans lost their jobs in the first 2 years of Bush in office, cut unemployment benefits for more out-of-work Americans than any president in U.S. history, set the all-time record for most foreclosures in a 12-month period, appointed more convicted criminals to administration positions than any president in U.S. history. I mean, should I go on? I mean, where is the admiration for this scamster, of this first magnitude scamster? Set the all-time record, set the record for the least amount of press conferences. Well, good. Presided over the biggest energy crisis in U.S. history and refused to intervene when corruption was revealed. Presided over the highest gasoline prices in U.S. history. Cut health care benefit for war veterans. dissolved more international treaties than any president in U.S. history. The most secretive and unaccountable in U.S. history. Members of my cabinet, this is actually in first person, are the richest of any administration in U.S. history. Had more states to simultaneously go bankrupt than any president in the history of the United States. My voice won't hold out. There is 10 times more. This presidency is catastrophic for the American people and for the world. And it is running on stunts like flying to Baghdad. This dumbass stunt. Risking the key officer in the government of the United States and having it done, not for the U.S. troops. Everybody said, oh, you know, he did it for the troops. And you see those, you know, tear coming down his eye. He's serving this Halliburton, dinner because that's who their subsidiary, Kellogg Root Brown, that's who cooks the meals and that's who provides it. It probably was like $100 a plate or something like that. But this was set perfectly, purposely at 6 a.m. So essentially it was Thanksgiving breakfast. They were eating turkey at 6 a.m. in order to have it play in our homes. So if you thought that looked good, this is Bush taking advantage of your sentiments. Don't let him do it. Where are we going? Rick Fox, thank you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. It's Funky. I heard you picking on this 13-year-old girl, and I thought it was about time you picked on somebody your own size.
Well... I think it was a boy.
My bad. But anyway, I got a couple quick points and actually got a question for you.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of ironic. I actually started listening to you when I was about 14 or 15. I'm 35 now. And, you know, listen to you religiously, you know, as a... youngster in high school and, you know, hid the radio under the covers when parents would check on me and, every weekend, you know, you'd have a decent topic, and not that you don't now. I mean, these topics are decent, but I turn in, you know, or tune in maybe every 6 to 8 months, and I feel like I have not missed anything because it's, you know, it's the same thing. And one time, maybe, 5 years ago when I called in, I, you know, used to call in occasionally on a race issue with affirmative action, and you said to me, you know, you're really upset. You know, after probably the fifth time over several months that I called in, you said, you know, what's up, Funky? You got a mouse in your pocket? And I said, no, I'm just happy to see you, you know, as a joke. But, you know, I understand you know what that expression means. And I would pose that to you now. Peter, it's the same thing all the time.
Well, let me tell you two things, then I'll let you ask your question. Number one, this is open line talk radio, which means that anybody can bring up absolutely anything they want. If they're tired of hearing the same subject, they should bring up something. And I, at one level of radio programming, I agree with you that every week I should think of some different topic and should, you know, but I don't think that this is what it's all about. This is not talk radio. This is a rock and roll station, and this time is set aside to, in many ways, to satisfy the demands of the Federal Communications Commission that says you have to give some, you have to give some time in your programming over to public affairs. Now, if it's not entertaining to keep talking about what the direction of our country and what it's doing in Iraq and the consequences for our soldiers and for ourselves as a nation, I don't know what is. And you know, if it's repetitious, then it's repetitious, and then that I would throw that to you to bring up other subjects. But you had a question.
Yeah, my question is fairly simple, I take your point, and I take it to heart, and I appreciate it. My question is this. With the war in Iraq and the discussion every weekend with regard to that, I miss the issues that you have brought on, brought up locally with regard to the state of Michigan. You know, we're all Michiganders, and granted, on a global scale, this all affects us, but there's several issues locally that affect us, and I know you do your best to dedicate your time to a lot of efforts, whatever it may be, and spend a tremendous amount of time. One thing I could say that you haven't even touched on, which is a fellow jock of yours that I know you know, with regard to Bob Bauer and him being stationed in his trailer collecting soup and donations in Royal Oak at this time.
Well, I got to tell you, and I don't want to go on with that. I mean, I'm not about to start promoting essentially what are promotions for other stations. When stations do that, I'm not trying to say that Bob's a nice guy, and I'm sure he's sincere, but mostly this is done to give, you know, to profile the station, its call letters and what have you. So let's not go there. Either you got a question or say goodbye.
I'll say goodbye. Thanks, Pete.
All right. Thank you. I thought he had a question. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Peter.
Hi.
Joe from Ipsy here.
Hi, Joe.
I like I said to your screen, I don't know if it's idiot hour or what. It was, you know, it, all of a sudden there's just this deluge of people that, I don't agree with you, Peter. And the 13-year-old here this evening really got me going here. I wasn't going to call tonight, but, man, I got two things I'd like to say to the young man. You know, and I understand he's young, and I don't want to pick on him and everything, but two things. First of all, George Bush does not, quote-unquote, kick butt. Peter Werby kicked butt. All right?
Well, you know what? Well, go ahead.
And the second thing is that this is a little advice for the young man. I know it's not required reading anymore, but if you can find it, get Animal Farm and read it and see if you can understand who the characters in there are today.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the other thing, I want to be quick because I'm looking forward to this interview. I want to hear a lot about this chili thing.
It's incredible. Yeah.
Just real quickly, I've come across something here in my travels apparently there was four guys that were busted. The caller there after the young man mentioned Al-Qaeda. And I just, every time I hear that word anymore, this little flag goes up in my head. I saw a picture on the internet, I forget which site, I'm all over the place anymore, but there was a picture of four guys who were arrested as suspected Al-Qaeda members, and it turns out that they're members of the Israeli Mossad, which for our fellow listeners here who don't know, that's Israel's intelligence agency.
Right.
Okay. So I've got an equation here that I've come up with that I want to share with your listeners. It's a hypothesis. It's a theory. You can check me on this. I may be wrong. I may be right. But here's what it is. Write it down. Mossad plus ISI times CIA equals Al-Qaeda. just check me on that. I could be wrong.
All right.
I could be wrong.
I'll do it.
That's my input.
All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Well, here, I wanted to just go out with some emails here. And let's see. A lot of people are saying they, in fact, were able to get our streaming all night. In fact, we have a number of people whose email I want to quickly read to you. This is Matt in Elmira, New York. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com is where he wrote, "Hey, Peter, you are streaming fine at WRF.com. Also, as a former Marine, I have to say the president and his pals are using our troops for publicity stunts. It's almost criminal. Keep fighting the good fight." That's what that veteran has to say. Neil writes in, doesn't say where he's from, but he says, "I recently had a life-threatening situation, and and the soonest I could get an appointment with urology was 5 months. This is at a veterans hospital. Luckily, from one angle, I'm under the care of the palliative care unit, and they have clout and got my appointment moved up from February 28th to November 5th. By the way, wealthy veteran is defined by Shrub as those earning more than 26 per year, at which point huge co-payments kick in. Bush has cut $47 billion from the VA budget in the past year." This is what Bush thinks of the veteran, and he couldn't care less about veterans. They're cannon fodder for him. He's the guy that was the draft dodger. Go to awolbush.com. You'll see it all. James and Maria, they say, "Tax money should go towards education if we really want to make the world a better place. Certainly not violence and warfare. Terrorism can only be fought through compassion and understanding. I'd rather see the money spent on helping these countries rather than military invasion." Oh, James and Maria, you're being so silly. All of Bush Sr.'s arms investments aren't going to make any money that way, destroying the country, nor are Cheney's pals in like Halliburton going to make any money when they clean it all up. Let me see. That was James and Maria. Let me see if I accidentally cut off. Whoop, I guess the rest of the people, I cut them off. My name is Brian. I'm from Windsor. I just wanted to email you to tell you that we aren't all unaware listeners tonight. So far, nobody can give a valid reason as to why they think Bush is a hero for taking a sneaky trip to Iraq. It was so obvious to me, at least, that it was for publicity opinion back home. Some of the callers tonight have shown what ignorance can conjure up since that stunt worked on a lot of people, apparently. I'm trying to stay hopeful that the 13-year-old is just misled from whatever. And not representative of the future, or it will be a short one. Although I doubt the kid came up with his idea of Bush from education on the man or the current situation. All right, that's it. Stay tuned. I've got this extraordinarily interesting documentary about Chile. That's all next. Thanks for listening, and thanks for calling, and we'll do it again next week.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Cyber Crew. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff on-air giveaways. Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air. Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today. Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream. It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too.
To WRIF.com. More Riff Rock is coming right up.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and
eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Carrera's Cucina Italiana Restaurant on Telegraph Road in Dearborn Heights.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com.
Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roach, put your best pace and body forward with help from Dr. Roach.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We were looking at that new Girls Gone Wild video, and well, a few observations were made.
The producer is hilarious. You hear in this one more than what I'm used to. You hear the producer's voice on, hey, let's see your ass. Yeah, turn. Oh, man, is that hot.
Yeah.
They encourage him like the creepiest porno guy.
Yeah.
And then when if they show their ass, which they usually do, he goes, yeah, let's see the kitty cat.
Oh, is that right?
Yep.
You're taking a line from Ike?
Yep.
Oh, man.
And then if there's two girls, be like, yeah, why don't you guys make out? And they start making out. Yeah, why don't you take the top off and make out again?
Oh.
And they just push them like step by step by step.
Take them right through it.
And he always asks them how old they are. And when they go, 18, you hear the production crew go, whoa! And the guy goes, 18. The younger the age is, the more creepy the guy sounds.
Sounds like us.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
Hey.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1
WRIF. Ow, you're shouting at me.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening. Now is the Riff's Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock. 1 solid hour of your Riff Rock and Roll request.
All the excitement and fun you can bear.
With Meltdown, the big unit on the Riff.
Your opportunity to take control of the WRIF playlist
with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
Call in your Riff Rock and Roll requests to Meltdown at 313-298-WRIF or email them to meltdown at WRIF.com.
The Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown.
He's in big trouble.
101 WRIF Rocks.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Kickers All-American Grill on Plymouth Road in Livonia. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit
at WRIF.com.
Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock.
At WRIF.com.
You're listening to 101 WRIF Detroit, a greater media station broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. There's more Riff Rock coming right up, so don't go anywhere.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked about Pittsburgh Steeler Joey Porter, who is fine. But he was shot in the buttocks.
That's how my dad says it. He goes, buttocks. He's always like, you hear about that guy who was shot?
Yeah, where was that?
He was shot in the buttocks. Where in the arm? Oh, hell no, Mike. It was shot in the buttocks.
I feel like a third grader. This story made me laugh every time I heard it. This guy being shot in the buttocks.
I know. Buttocks.
Like taking a dump and there'd be a hole in it.
Someone yesterday was reporting the story and said he was shot in the hip. And I'm literally yelling at the TV going, no, he was shot in the buttocks.
Somebody is so hung up that they can't find themselves saying buttocks. They have to say hip. See, people are like bitten by a snake in the ass. Seems like they're always embarrassed because they know it's their buttocks. There's no issue of pain or infection or trauma. It's always just like, yeah, well, it was my damn buttocks.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
Hey, Riff!
101.1 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
The Riff rocks the West Side Tuesday night. It's Party Central on the West Side this Tuesday night with 101 WRIF at Snooker's Pool and Pub.
In Livonia on the northwest corner of Schoolcraft and Inkster, just off I-96.
Yeah! Join Meltdown, the big unit, for the biggest Tuesday night party in the Motor City. Join in the WRIF Pool Challenge to score awesome Riff prizes.
Like $101 gift certificates to Murray's Jewelry on Plymouth Road in Redford. CDs, T-shirts, tickets, and so much more.
Come on out and see what you've been missing Tuesday nights with the Riff at Snookers.
Have you lost your f***ing mind?
Not yet.
That's this Tuesday night at the Westside Party Command Center, Snooker's Pool and Pub, on the northwest corner of Schoolcraft and Inkster, just up I-96 in Livonia, with the Motor City's home of rock and roll.
Features the voices of historic participants, and they chronicle events surrounding the rise of the Allende Popular Unity Government and its violent overthrow by U.S.-backed Chilean military forces, and also the coup's aftermath. So let's listen to this. I'll be back in a little while to say hello again and kind of summarize things. And if you'd like to find out more about this particular disc, again, it is called Chile, Promise of Freedom. It's from the Freedom Archives, and you can go to akpress.org. So let's listen to Chile, Promise of Freedom, on the Peter Werby Show.
Jamás será vencido el pueblo unido. Jamás será vencido el pueblo.
Just like the September 11th, now so indelible in our minds. But it happened in 1973. September 11th, 1973.
That 11th of September of 1973 changed the course of our history.
Chileans had elected a socialist as their president. He was Salvador Allende, a physician by profession, a longtime leader of the progressive left. His presidency was cut short by one of the most brutal military coups that Latin America has ever seen, a coup that was unleashed on September 11th, but would fundamentally change life in Chile for the next three decades. Isabel Letelier, a human rights activist, writer, and sculptor, is the widow of Orlando Letelier, who at the time of the military coup was Allende's Minister of Defense. Like many Chileans who were in Santiago that day, she can recall in an instant the most precise details of that September 11th.
So by 5 a.m., the telephone rang. I took the phone, and it was the president calling Orlando. Orlando took the phone, and the president said, Orlando, there are rumors of a coup. I want you to check what's going on. By then, Orlando was the Minister of Defense. And he calls to his office as the Minister of Defense. It was 5 a.m., and there was somebody there who answered. Orlando said, who is this? And it was a general. And he didn't ask him the obvious question, what are you doing in my office? But Orlando asked me again, take the phone, and he said, listen to the voice of a traitor.
Ariel Dorfman is a Chilean novelist and essayist who on that day was in Santiago, Chile's capital city.
And we put on the radio, and there was military music. And we kept on turning the dial until we finally found one of the stations that was transmitting the Democratic government's positions. And that's where we eventually were going to hear the goodbye from Salvador Allende, his last speech.
Isabel Allende, the novelist and member of Salvador Allende's family, was a journalist in Chile at the time of the coup.
We had been hearing the idea in the air that there would be a military coup. Most Chileans didn't know what a military coup was because we didn't remember ever having experienced something like that. And we thought that we were quite different from other countries in Latin America, which we called, with great arrogance, banana republics. We thought that we were the English of Latin America, and that would never happen to us.
By now it's 6:30, and the president said, Orlando, I want you to go as soon as you can to the Minister of Defense to see if we still have anybody that is loyal to us. And I was not going to see Orlando for many, many months. Later on, he told me that he had gone to the Ministry of Defense. He arrived there, the doors were closed. He knocked on the door, and he said, open the door, this is the minister. So somebody inside said, oh, let the minister come in. The door opened, and he felt the rifles in his back. And he turns around, and one of them is his bodyguard. And he was taken to the basement, and he was stripped of his clothes, and there were many people there, many people, that's what he says, and they were naked.
But as I drove to downtown Santiago from where I lived, I realized that the streets were almost empty. There were no private vehicles around. There were a lot of military tanks and trucks, stranded people waiting for public transportation. And I thought, well, maybe this is a military coup, but not quite realizing what it was. It must have been 7:30 in the morning, 8 o'clock maximum. And I went to my job, and the building was closed, the door was chained, and there was a person who worked in the building who was against the government of Salvador Allende, who was a right-wing person, and he was celebrating. He was telling people to go back home because the liberators had come. And so I kept on driving downtown to the house of a friend because I wanted to call my mother-in-law and tell her to pick up the kids who were at school. As I arrived to the house of my friends, I saw her in the street, and she was crying. And she said, there's a military coup, and my husband left very early because he was a teacher. So he had gone down to Santiago to the Instituto Nacional, which is a public school that is 3 blocks away from La Moneda, from the palace. And so I said, I'm going to pick him up. And I found the Professor Arenas, who at the time must have been in his 50s. And he was listening to the news, and he was crying. And we stayed there for quite a long time, listening to the radio until all the radio stations were cut off the air, except one. And then suddenly we heard the voice of Allende in his last.
Le salva el presidente de la República. Desde el Palacio de la Moneda. Informaciones confirmadas señalan que un sector de la marinería habría aislado Valparaíso y que la ciudad estaría ocupada, lo cual significa un levantamiento.
The anchas alamedas, the broad streets would be open again for the free man to walk. And he asked the people not to go
out. Viva Chile, viva el pueblo, vivan los trabajadores. Estas son mis últimas palabras. Tengo la certeza de que mi sacrificio no será en vano. Tengo la certeza de que por lo menos.
And Allende said that he was never going to surrender. And so my friend, this professor, and I went to the roof of the building and saw the airplanes coming, and then the bombing.
Tanks and armored cars had surrounded the presidential palace, La Moneda, after Salvador Allende refused to surrender to the armed forces. Allende and his supporters took up arms and fought to the end in defense of the popularly elected government.
Gustavo y Augusto de Patricio, hay una comunicación, una información de personal de la
Admiral Patricio Carvajal at the Ministry of Defense informs generals Augusto Pinochet and Gustavo Lee over military radio that the attack on La Moneda achieved its goal. Allende is dead. He declares that Allende has committed suicide in the new pattern of deception that would last many years.
They say that Allende committed suicide and is dead now.
Entendido, digo perfectamente, cambio.
That 11th of September of 1973 changed the course of our history. In a week, the Congress was closed, the press was eliminated, we couldn't meet with people, we had a curfew, unions were banned. The people in the previous government were put in prison, and a terrible killing took place. The prisons were not enough. They created concentration camps from north to south. It was a bloody, bloody coup.
Over 3,200 Chileans died or disappeared during the military coup and in its aftermath. Tens of thousands were imprisoned. Santiago's stadiums that had seen the joy of sport and spectacle became notorious torture chambers where bodies were carted out by the hundreds, and the early morning saw corpses outside the stadium walls of those who had jumped to their deaths rather than face the misery inside. The military unleashed a repression so fierce that it defied analysis. What could have Allende's presidency represented to the Chilean right wing, the armed forces and their backers in the United States, to warrant such a brutal response? Ariel Dorfman, Chilean author and human rights activist.
Chile was trying an experiment which was path-breaking in the history of humanity. And I'm trying to say this without any sort of Chile-centrism in that sense, because we have a tendency towards that, we Chilenos, to think that we're the center of history. But for a couple of years, we were, in some sense, or the center of history passed through Santiago, because what we were trying to do and to prove is that you could make structural changes in social justice and economic justice, and at the same time, not only maintain, but deepen the democratic forms of government and participation.
Isabel Allende.
I think that there are many people who would describe the time previous to the hate, the rate of hate. It was a time of despair.
nos hablan de libertad, cuando de ella nos privan, en realidad, mire cómo te jodan, tranquilidad, cuando nos atormenta, autoridad, quería santo padre.
The military and the conservatives claim that to save the country from itself, they had to stop the Allende government and the social experiment it had put into motion. But just 9 months earlier, Salvador Allende, in a speech before the United Nations, warned of the impending attack against his government.
Vengo de Chile.
I come from Chile, a small country, but one where citizens are free to express themselves as they
see fit.
Chile, he said, would establish an economic democracy in which its own natural resources would benefit Chileans, beginning with the country's rich copper reserves.
Hemos nacionalizado las riquezas básicas.
We have nationalized our basic resources. We have nationalized copper. We have done so by a unanimous decision of Parliament, in which the government parties are in the minority. We want everybody to understand this clearly. We have not confiscated the great foreign copper mining companies.
At the time, President Allende and others were denouncing a destabilization campaign coordinated and financed with millions of U.S. dollars, a destabilization that was meant to discredit the popular unity government, destroy its base of support, and maintain a political environment friendly to the presence of transnational corporations, regardless of the cost. René Castro, who was an artist, a student leader, and teacher at the time of the coup, recalls the optimism of the left in the face of increasing intolerance by conservative political parties and the media.
We really believe that we can build a better society with a social experiment. Most of the people in Chile believe that. Some people were more reluctant to accept that as an idea, a political idea, but we all saw that. We can change the world and we can become a socialist country and have more equality for everybody. It was key things: work, housing, dignity, health. You're asking for those things in the country, you were part of the left, labeled as a communist or socialist.
As the destabilization campaign mounted through 1972 into 1973, U.S. officials publicly denied any involvement. In 1974, then-Secretary of State Henry Kissinger testified before the U.S. Congress.
And our concern was with the election in 1976, and not at all with a coup in 1973 about which we knew nothing and with which we had nothing to do, as I testified to in 1973 and as the President reaffirmed.
Investigations by the U.S. Congress would reveal quite a different story, as proof of the U.S. complicity and financing of the bloody coup emerged. Senator Frank Church, in congressional hearings on September 19, 1974, questioned Henry Kissinger.
I would like the Secretary to tell me how we could reconcile this kind of an intervention with the moral law that we're supposed to respect, with treaty law, with international law, or with any law other than the law of the jungle.
All of the matters to which you refer have been developed by well-established procedures in the government that have been consistently tightened, approved by the President, and briefed to the appropriate committees. This doesn't make them right.
It makes it all the more appalling to me, Mr. Secretary.
Now, what was the threat?
Isabel Letelier.
The nationalization of the copper minings that Allende did, anyway, according to Nixon and Kissinger, it was that Cuba was there in the Caribbean and Chile was in the south, and they were going to get together and have this big hamburger with a lot of ketchup.
If Allende should win the election in Chile.
Former U.S. President Richard Nixon speaking in 1977.
And then you have Castro in Cuba. What you will in effect have in Latin America is a red sandwich. And eventually, It'll all be red.
Ariel Dorfman.
I think that Chile was a model for the world in some sense. And if we had been successful, this would have been a form of change, profoundly social changes of democratic nature, justice, economic sovereignty, and national liberation.
That problem was the problem that Nixon and Kissinger faced.
René Castro.
Can we allow this to happen? Obviously not. So immediately after Allende was elected, they put a red flag. They said, we can't permit this to happen.
El imperialismo y su crueldad.
President Salvador Allende addressing the United Nations.
Tienen un largo y ominoso historial.
Imperialism and its cruelties have had a long and ominous history in Latin America. We are witnessing a pitched battle between the sovereign states and the great transnational corporations, worldwide organizations which are not accountable to or regulated by any parliament or institution representing the collective interest.
Donde están no constituye un
vínculo.
Lo que les interesa es donde obtienen
merchants have
sus
no
ganancias.
Country of their own. Wherever they may be, they have no ties with the soil.
Pertenece
all they are interested in is in the source of their profits. Those
desde el momento mismo en que triunfamos electoralmente, el 4 de septiembre de 1970, estamos afectados por el desarrollo de una presión externa de gran envergadura que pretendió impedir la instalación de un gobierno libremente elegido por el pueblo y derrocarlo desde entonces.
El punishment for Chile was a really particular one from the State Department. For that reason, they get so involved. And historically, we all know that Kissinger was particularly involved in the Chilean case.
Where the age-old antagonism between freedom and tyranny is concerned, we are not neutral.
So it was a clear message. Any attempt to elect a leftist, this is what to happen. It will happen, something like happened in Chile. For that reason, the Chile experience, it was so bloody.
The destruction was, I think, a strategic thing from the point of view both of the United States that mouthed that it was for democracy, but wherever democracy would appear against its interest, it would destroy it, such as it had done in Guatemala or had done a few years before in the Dominican Republic or had done in Brazil. But in the case of Chile, of course, it was a much more important strategic problem there. And also from the point of view of those who control the land and the resources of Chile, who really are just a very, very small proportion of the population. And so I think it was strategically important for them to destroy Allende and destroy him, not in a democratic election, because they could have waited a few years. Instead, they decided to carry out an exemplary, bloody, and you know, I hate these words, bloody, but it's really, really true in that sense, a very pain-racking form of a repressive society. And then they brought into bearing the shock therapy form, which was the neoliberal form of economic policies in Latin America.
Isabel Allende.
Together with the students and teachers there, he was rounded up, arrested, taken to the Chile State Prison.
a dancer and choreographer, is the widow of Victor Jara, one of Chile's most prominent singer-composers, a man who could never walk unrecognized through the streets of Santiago or through the callampas, the shanty towns, where poor people lived. Victor Jara's songs and lyrics were known
internationally. Places where torture was carried out, was involved brutality. And Victor was singled out. Many other people were also singled out. He was very brutally treated. He was beaten up. And then his hands were at one stage beaten and broken. And he was killed with machine gun. His body was then later left in the street in a población, and I found his body in the morgue a week after the coup, just because somebody had recognized him among all the anonymous bodies there. Otherwise Victor would have been disappeared, and I would never have known really what had happened to him.
Hortensia Allende, Salvador Allende's widow, denouncing the Chilean military junta to a gathering in London's Trafalgar Square in 1973, 2 weeks after the coup.
Hay miles y miles de detenidos en los campos de concentración en Santiago y en otros lugares del país.
And the stadiums, now concentration camps, have thousands and thousands of detainees in Santiago and in other cities of the country.
¿Dónde son? Flagelados, torturados y asesinados.
Where they're tortured and assassinated.
The destruction of civil life in Chile had begun. René Castro.
And when the military start killing people and start using the information they got from the State Department, from the CIA, they start targeting key people within the cultural life of Chile. Victor Jara was assassinated. Ángel Parra had to go to exile. They didn't let the music of Violeta Parra play in the radios. Inti Illimani was in exile. I mean, everybody on the left, I would say, practically went to exile because they couldn't live in Chile and they couldn't work in Chile and they couldn't even talk in Chile. It was a dark period of time.
Quiero denunciar los atropellos a los derechos humanos fundamentales de un pueblo que se había caracterizado por su trayectoria democrática.
I want to denounce the violation of human rights of a people that have characterized itself for its democratic tradition.
Y que hoy es víctima de una feroz e inhumana represalia por parte de la junta militar gobernante.
And that today is victim of an inhuman and ferocious reprisal by the governing junta.
I didn't know that I was in the list of the people more wanted because I was a member of the Student Federation and I also was teaching and I was a member of the MIR, the Movimiento Izquierda Revolucionario. When somebody called me at the house and they said, René, you know what, you're in the list. So we won't rescue you. It was a friend of mine who later was eliminated. And we went to his house because he has a safety house. But it wasn't safe because we get arrested, both of us.
It was very hard to fight back. There was no way that one could fight back. As a journalist, there was not one chance of telling anybody what really was going on.
Isabel Allende.
Journalists learned to write in code. And people learned to read in code. So between the lines, you could say a few things, but very little. And you risked your life. At least you risked your freedom. We tried to smuggle information out of the country, especially to Germany. Tried to hide people and then help them cross the border. There was nowhere to go. Because in Argentina, in Uruguay, in Brazil, they were arresting people and sending them back to Chile.
When I was arrested on the coup d'etat, they took me to the military academy. And I was treated really brutally there. That was my first confrontation with the military power. Then they took me to the Tacna garrison. And I was there for a few hours, and I saw this blood on the ground and the sticky smell of
a nasty smell of blood, and the terror and the torture have a smell, and I learned how to smell that, and I can recognize it now. There's a distinctive smell, and seeing people brutally treated, broken bones, without teeth, without fingernails, that was my first encounter with the terror. Then I went to the stadium, and then the stadium was brutal, just the amount of people being put in and on the locker rooms by the hundreds, then by the thousands, then people being killed in the stadium, disappeared in the stadium. Witness of that kind of brutality, I think it marked my life forever. I never imagined that would happen in my country. I never. Those military, our own people, brutally treating political opponent. And people think it still is a part of the democratic system. And it was not.
There's a recording of Pinochet's voice.
El avión echa en un cajón, se embala y se manda a enterrar a Cuba. Ya lo van a enterrar.
And Pinochet says, you know, Gustavo, what we got to do with Allende is, once he's dead, they say, let's just put him in a box, and there should be no funeral, and we should just hide him.
Ariel Dorfman.
He's trying to turn Allende into the first desaparecido. He's trying to turn him into the first missing person. What he wants to do with Allende is what he's going to be doing afterwards with more than 3,000 people. And that's a large proportion of the dead in Chile. To take those people and put them in graves and not allow their families to ever mourn them in the sense of not know whether they're living or dead.
Throughout the world, as the stories emerged of those killed and tortured in the Santiago Stadium, and in camps throughout Chile, such as the infamous Villa Grimaldi and the Tacna garrison, Chilean officials abroad were questioned increasingly by the press. Walter Heitmann was the Chilean military's ambassador to the U.S.
I would say in Chile is no torture, because if I said there's a little, they would say, well, there's somewhere there's torture. There's no torture. That somebody abuses his authority, that's possible, and that's out of control. There's as much torture as there's right now in the United States, I would say, because torture's everywhere. Little boys playing on the ground and somebody wants the other one to tell him the truth while he twists his arm. Always, and in every country, there's a little bit of, I don't call it torture, there's a little of, it's a technicality that people from police and others use to know the truth.
In a radio transmission intercepted during the coup, General Augusto Pinochet orders summary executions.
Any person found with arms or explosives will be executed immediately.
Though many Chileans died from torture, others survived to tell of their ordeal and bear witness to the extrajudicial executions the junta carried out following the coup. Isabel Allende.
And it's so hard to accept that, so hard to admit that we could do it too. But once we do, we can fight against it. Once we accept that it is in the society, it's part of the evil of a society, and we have to keep it at bay, keep it controlled, then we can start healing, we can start reconciling, we can start inventing a new Chile. But if we ignored what happened, if we deny it, if we think that it was, oh, just a few cases here and there, some crazy guys that... No, it wasn't. It was a system, an organized system, like the Germans did in Germany, like the fascists did in Italy and in Spain, like they did in Greece, like they did everywhere, because everywhere it's exactly the same story. If you give anyone total power with impunity, these things happen.
You're listening to The Peter Werbe Show, and we're featuring today Chile, A Promise of Freedom, a documentary about the overthrow of the democratically elected government of Salvador Allende on September 11th, 1973. We'll return to it right after these. By the way, if you'd like to find this CD, it's available through akpress.org. Right back with more Chile, Promise of Freedom on The Peter Werbe Show.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Cyber Crew. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff on-air giveaways.
Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air.
Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today.
Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream.
It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too.
To WRIF.com.
More Riff Rock is coming right up.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like La Scala, located in the heart of Windsor's famous Little Italy district. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's five best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We were talking with Peter Frampton about his TV viewing habits, including reality TV.
I could watch Peter Frampton's week edited into a half an hour. I'd watch it like crazy.
Oh, hell yeah.
Just in case you hit the voice box.
Yeah. Well, who's the other girl with the mess that's always falling out of her clothes?
Anna Nicole,
Anna Nicole
Smith,
yeah. The big fat ass.
Yeah.
Was always...
I did not say that, but...
Have you tapped that?
She's, that was pretty unbelievable.
Now, if you had to guess, Peter, because you've been around the block, what is she on?
I'd say a combination of muscle relaxers, Ambien, and Percodan.
There we go.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
That is.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Riff.
You're listening to 101 WRIF Detroit, a greater media station broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. There's more Riff Rock coming right up, so don't go anywhere.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday
for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can. Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the Riff Request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Riff all day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101 The Riff.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Mamma Mia's, located conveniently inside the Quality Suites in downtown Windsor. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roach, put your best face and body forward with help from Dr. Roach.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Broadcasting worldwide on the web, you're listening to 101 WRIF at WRIF.com, a service of Greater Media. Keep it here for more Riff Rock coming right up.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We called Jackson about his birthday party this weekend and wondered how people were going to afford this $5,000 price tag to get in.
Corey Haim is taking out a home equity loan. My brother Tito and I have worked out a payment plan.
September 11th, 1973, military coup against the democratically elected government of Chile, and including the problems that arose when it became obvious that this was backed by the United States government of Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger. Let's rejoin it. It's Chile, Promise of Freedom on the Peter Werbe Show.
The days following the coup turned into weeks. The weeks turned into months. Eventually, the permanence of the military's takeover of civilian life in Chile began to sink in. René Castro.
When the coup d'etat happens and people realize that it was a real coup d'etat, because everybody thought, oh, it will be an intervention by the military and then they will give the government back to the civilians. That's what most of the people thought at the time. We said, no, this is not a regular coup d'etat. You don't make this concentration camp just for a coup d'etat will change the system. They will change the whole conception and they will change the constitution. And eventually that will happen. Today, Chile is still under the Pinochet constitution. And most of the problem that we have politically today is because we have a constitution who was designed for Pinochet.
Life went on slowly. We went back to work. Slowly things start to look normal.
Isabel Allende stayed in Chile until 1974.
There was absolute censorship in the press and in all the media. So we only heard about what was happening by rumors and by what we could see ourselves in the streets. I had many leftist friends, and I'm from Allende's family. I was not involved in politics or in the government at the time, but I was a journalist and I knew more or less what was going on because I had many connections. At the beginning, people didn't quite believe the rumors of torture and killing and the extent of it, because it had never happened in Chile, so it was so unusual, something so difficult to handle. Then we sort of started getting used to the idea, and I found myself talking about torture at breakfast in front of my children. Repression became something normal that one had to live with. And then I told my husband we were going crazy, that we couldn't live like this. We couldn't live in a place where torture and killing and torturing children in front of their parents, assassinating people, making people disappear, was normal. Where not having freedom was normal. We just couldn't live like that. And I tried to keep myself sane by repeating to myself all the time that we couldn't get used to it, that we had to fight back, that we had to tell the world what was going on. And I was not alone, of course. Many, many people were thinking and feeling as I was.
The resistance in Chile had begun soon after the coup and grew, though not without great pains. Isabel Allende.
They would arrest someone, and the person would start shouting his or her name so that people will know that that person in particular was missing. I knew of people who had been tortured. I interviewed several. I saw the scars. I saw the trauma, the psychological trauma, the terror. I had to hide people also in my house and then try to place them in embassies. It was almost impossible to go through the gate, of course, because all the embassies were guarded. Most people had to jump a wall. And sometimes a mother would have to jump a wall and a newborn baby was left behind. And my job or somebody else's job would be to get the baby into the embassy. It wasn't easy. It was a hard time. But it was also a time of solidarity, a time in which I realized that for every torturer, there were 1,000 Chileans willing to help. For every person that was going to pick up the phone and tell on somebody else and have that person arrested, there would be 5 willing to hide that person. It was a time when the worst and the best came to the surface. People who were very outspoken leaders went into hiding. And people who were quiet priests, quiet workers that ignored had even noticed it. Because, of course, those were the people that you cannot put in a cage, the people whose minds you can't control. And they are the ones who sort of express the voice of the people.
Of course, they tried to wipe his movement out by killing the artist, by censorship.
Joan Hara.
But during the military government, in spite of everything,
children to grow up there, and I was beginning to think that it would last much longer than I had expected. Then by the end of 1974, I had been involved in many things that were considered illegal by the dictatorship, and I was feeling more and more scared. I felt that the circle of repression was closing around me. Then from 2 different people, I heard that I was going to be arrested. I went into hiding into somebody else's house, but then I started fearing that if they caught me, something might happen to my children or whatever, and then I decided to leave in a matter of a week.
The years that followed were among the darkest in Chile as the junta consolidated its hold on Chilean society and extended its reach even beyond Chile's borders.
Operación Cóndor was created by the Chileans.
Isabel Letelier.
A colonel called Colonel Contreras. He had the big idea of getting together the secret polices of the countries around Chile that had military governments. It was Argentina and Brazil and Bolivia and Uruguay and Paraguay. And they all together share information through computers. They would arrest people in one country and torture him in another country, or just send an information that such and such person should be eliminated in a different country. It was done with the knowledge of the FBI and the CIA. They had information about the operations, and they sponsored the operations. They collaborated in the work of Cóndor. I guess the Cóndor operation was terminated when DINA, the Chilean secret police, killed Orlando Letelier in Washington, D.C. under the orders of General Pinochet. Some other military and Cubans and an American citizen killed him with a bomb. The CIA and the FBI and the American government felt that they had gone too far, that it was all right if they had these operations of killing away in the southern cone, but coming to Washington, D.C. was a travesty. So Operation Condor was terminated.
The plot to assassinate Orlando Letelier revealed the lengths to which the junta would go to rid itself of dissent and the precision with which its assassins would take aim. Before his death, Orlando Letelier had called for a return to democracy in Chile and had, like Salvador Allende, espoused Chile's right to benefit from its own natural resources. Many opponents of the military regime believed the purpose of the coup and the support the United States gave the Chilean generals was to open the way to foreign capital once again.
There was a lesson that was being taught to us.
Ariel Dorfman.
And if you look at what happened in the next 25 years, what the after effects of that coup and everything surrounding it, the repression, the shock therapy, and the torture, the exile, the mass murders that happened, the genocide that happened in the rest of Latin America. If you look at what happened, you will see that it was fundamentally a way of integrating Chile and Latin America into the global marketplace. It was a way of making these countries absolutely ready for foreign capital that could be invested, and that's what we saw. But of course, what we saw also is that the foreign capital was invested, but most of the benefits were not given to our people, but ended up in banks in the United States and elsewhere.
In the years following the military coup in Chile, the community of Chilean exiles grew in the United States, in Europe, in Latin America. It was populated by workers, students, professionals, intellectuals who told of their experiences. Some ventured back, others could not. Isabel Allende.
Repression was more organized, more efficient than before. So I didn't return. But in 1988, we had a plebiscite in Chile in which the government offered the population the possibility to choose between Pinochet for another 8 years or some kind of democratic government. And Pinochet, that had all the propaganda machine in his hands, lost the plebiscite. At that point, I returned to Chile for the first time, for a week only. And then I went back in 89 for the election, and I have been back ever since, at least.
The 1988 plebiscite had a profound effect on many Chileans. It represented both a political as well as a psychological opening. René Castro.
Pinochet called for a plebiscite, and this plebiscite let people regroup in Chile because he thought he would win the plebiscite, but he lost it. Then the cultural affairs start rebuilding again because they used this election, this plebiscite, in order to express themselves with music, with posters, with paintings. It was the beginning of what happened today. Today is absolutely freedom of expression in the country.
The plebiscite was followed 1 year later by Chile's first democratic election in nearly two decades. Christian Democrat Patricio Aylwin, presidential candidate of a coalition of 17 political parties, received an absolute majority.
It was a very interesting time because you still could feel the sense of caution and fear for many years after the election, even halfway through the next 6 years of the first democratically elected president, Patricio Aylwin, we could still feel how cautious the press was, how people feared the military, how there was this idea that if anything happened, the military would take over again. So it has taken a long time for the country to feel like a democracy. And I think that still one of the sequels of what happened is that many people have the idea that if the truth is known, if the truth is put on the table and we start discussing the dead, the disappeared ones, if we talk about torture, if we talk about the atrocities that were committed, if people come out with their stories and tell them, if we look for the bodies, that will sort of create some kind of repression or reaction from the military, that would hurt democracy. In my opinion, it would only fortify democracy and make it stronger.
Coming to terms with the past presents Chileans with a formidable challenge. Though some of Chile's institutions have changed, others have not, or still remain under the former regime's influence and control.
We are living the aftermath of a dictatorship.
Ariel Dorfman.
A dictatorship creates terror, creates fear, creates dread. And this dread does not end when the dictator decides to become the commander-in-chief of the army. That doesn't even finish when he decides to leave the commander-in-chief of the army and become senator for life, and keeps all the forms of power that kept him in power in place.
Their loved ones.
Joan Hara.
In the case of so many people, there has been no justice for all the horrors that happened during the military coup and during the whole 19 years of the military government. I mean, the scars of that have never been healed, and they cannot be healed until it's probably already too late for that, but so many years without knowing, without any sense of justice.
It has changed. The country has been changed.
Isabel Letelier.
After 17 years of military rule, we recovered democracy, but the truth is that military governments are a little bit like smoking tobacco. I mean, the effects are seen in a long term. And in this moment, after more than 10 years of democracy, we still cannot achieve the understanding of the Chilean citizens that they are the subjects of their history. They are scared still of practicing democracy. They don't believe in politics anymore. Well, that is something that is happening all over the world. But in Chile, I think it's very interesting because there was a poll done by United Nations and said that Chileans do not appreciate democracy. Pinochet told them for years and years and years in the press, in the radio, in the television, that politicians were corrupted and they don't understand what is the role of politics. So we don't see citizens taking on their hands the responsibility of changing things, of demanding to the authorities what they want. They were for 17 years with a